Chairperson Hutter. Vice Chair Peterson.
Here.
Member Pasek. Member Shirk.
Here.
Member Stotts.
Here.
Member White.
Here.
Member Williams.
Here.
A quorum is present.
I'm turning the meeting back over to Chairman Hutter.
Okay, thanks, John. Thanks, everyone. Okay, item number C, approval of the minutes of the past meetings of the authority. Tonight we have the minutes from the August meeting to approve, and is there any corrections or comments on the minutes?
I have a question. Item two was a discussion about the cricket communications, and we had requested our manager to notify them of what we're looking for in the way of additional information, communications, and so on. Have you done that, and have we heard back from them?
I wrote an email the day after the meeting last month.
Right, so it would be any question, or sorry, any, when I say questions, I mean questions or concerns about the veracity of the minutes, perhaps, isn't it? Okay, seeing none, need a motion to approve the minutes.
Second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved for the August meeting. Item number D, modification of the agenda. The chairman reserves the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. Okay, and Vice Chairman points out to me that there's just really a typo in the agenda that the second item, 5, is actually item 6, and the item shown as 6 is actually item 7. Aside from that, we'll just run it as published. Item number E, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority may speak on agendized, non-agendized matters related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic, and if your item requires extended discussion, you can make a request to the chairman to calendar the matter for a future Airport Authority meeting. Do we have any public comment at this time? Come right on up, and if you would sign in on the sheet, I should be up there.
No sheet. Should I wait for the sheet?
When the sheet will be coming there, but if you would just state your name for the record.
Name is Cecil Kupel. My business is brief. I basically want to add an agenda item for the next meeting. We are the party that wished to build the three hangars across from the heritage area, and the property line apparently has finally been resolved, and so we're ready to do business. The only gotcha for us is the appraisal fee that we will have to risk the appraisal, basically buying the appraisal, and then, of course, once the project goes to the public auction, if someone else bids and outbids us on the project, we would be out that fee, so we're interested in an agenda item for the next time, whether the board could pass through back to us again if we don't end up winning that bid, that we would be reimbursed for the appraisal since we wouldn't be building at that point. Otherwise, of course, we're serious and we're ready to go.
Okay, so, and there was a little bit of heads up, on that matter, and so I am familiar with what you're speaking of, and did hear that the lot line adjustment had gone through. So I think the matter that Mr. Kupel is referring to, of course, is, I think, a very relevant one to our overall lease process, and I don't know what the precedent has been in this area prior to my time, But the agenda item would be discussion and possible approval of a, of an approach that would say, okay, so we pay for the appraisal up front as asked. It goes to public bid. If we were not the winning bidder on the lease, could the winning bidder be expected as part of a winning bid to accept payment of the appraisal fee? That's what the request is. I'm turning to Council Takis here for...
That's the topic that should be discussed at a properly noticed agenda, not at this time.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And so just making sure I understand and read back that transmission. I think the other thing, just while we're talking about this, to make sure that we take best advantage of the time is, I know one of the open questions with regard to your development was also some question about agreements with other parties, that there would be some sharing of taxi lanes and so forth. To make best use of the time and the agenda, I was just wondering, do you have updates on that you'd like to?
Yes, we do have an agreement with the parties, the Heritage Hangar parties, and we will bring to the next meeting when this agenda item is discussed, that signed agreement.
Okay. So we'll work with you between now and then to detail out exactly what all might be in that agenda item, but certainly we'll put it on for next month.
Great.
And hopefully Tim, if you can arrange to just sort of capture sort of all of the updates and write that agenda item so that we can, again, make best use of time.
Fantastic.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick clarification. It's my understanding that the lot line adjustment that's been approved was the one that just simply cut off those existing hangars from the big lease parcel. We have not subdivided the parcel as requested, so at this point we still don't have that smaller piece of land to lease, if I'm not mistaken.
That is my understanding. Is that your understanding, Mr. Cabal?
It is my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, no, we're all on the same page, and I think that's kind of where I'm headed is I want to get, I think we'd all like to get checked in on where is the overall process, because, yes, there are quite a few steps left to go here.
But we're trudging along, so we think we're going to get there.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Any other public comment at this time? Yes, sir. And, again, if you would sign in on the sheet and state your name for the record, please.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Gonzalez. I'm the owner of Jet Ranch. And myself and my other neighbor, and the reason I'm doing this now is because next month when you have a hearing, I don't plan on being here. We want to voice our opinion to what I believe we're talking about here is Quonset huts. I have a letter from John Mays, and I want to put this letter on the record and hand it to someone. Mr. Takis? And I'd like to go on the record saying I'm very, very much against putting up Quonset huts. That's my objection, is not hangars, but only Quonset huts. And they just don't fall within what Carson City has always been in the past. I think there's issues as they relate to structure, as they relate to when they were originally conceived and how they are today. I'm also opposed because it creates a very unfair advantage to myself, particularly, because they can be built for a very small amount of money, and I've spent over $13 million on Jet Ranch. So I don't have any problem about being on the airport, but I don't want to be next door to them. So that's my position on that, so I voice my opposition to it, and I thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gonzalez, and thank you for being here. The letter you refer to from Mr. Mays, which will enter into the record and I guess get duplicated for the authority, who is that reference to your comment?
He owns the old Ted Country Hangar.
Okay.
I provided a copy to each of you. Mr. Mays had emailed me a copy, but I'll give the original to the recording secretary.
Great. So, yeah, that, I thought I saw something here. I wanted to tie that together. So,
thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other public comment at this time? Okay. Retrieving the lost agenda. Oh, there you go. Apologies. Okay, we move on to item F, our public hearings for the evening, starting with number one, discussion and possible action to approve the use of the airport terminal for the EAA's B-17 aluminum overcast event on September 22nd. And I believe Mr. Reynolds Okay, Mr. Follett, yep. I'll note that.
I'm Gary Follett. I'm with the EAA 403. And next week we have the aluminum overcast with the EAA that's coming into the Carson City Airport. And it's going to be an opportunity for us to for awareness for the EAA 403 and also as a fundraiser. The plane will be landing midday on Monday. It will be giving rides and tours on Tuesday and leaving Wednesday morning. They're going to have two trailers, 28 feet long, that they're bringing in for support, ones for the parts and the tools to work on the plane, and the other ones for the memorabilia and stuff to sell for the plane and tickets. And we're going to park the trailer, I believe, next to the terminal building between the EA building and the terminal, and also the other trailer will be there. The terminal will only be used basically for going to people who need to use the restrooms. We also will have the EA building open for people to use the restrooms and if people need to sit down while they're waiting for the plane. That's basically what's going to happen, if that's all right.
Okay, and Tim, I, being experienced in the previous episodes I believe aluminum overcast in specific has been at Carson before, right?
Right, that's correct. I believe
nothing different from our past engagements, right?
It's pretty much the same thing that happened with the Ford Tri-Motor when it came to town. Fortunately, it went without a hitch, and the terminal was used and cleaned up afterwards, and everything put back in its place. Fortunately, even the bathrooms were cleaned, so we were pretty happy with that.
And you've determined and verified all insurances or anything that has previously been requested and has been typical is in place? And
EAA has excellent insurance policies, and yes, we will. I have not gotten a rider yet, but I'm sure I'll have that by the end of the week.
Okay. Questions from the authority? Vice Chairman.
A couple of things. You may have said this, but it went by kind of quick. Did you say you're bringing your own restrooms for the public to use addition to ours?
No, we have the A building right next door to the terminal building where they can go in to use the restrooms or the terminal building. So there'll be one on each side of the trailer, basically.
In other similar public events, we had some concern about the public being there, and it requested that the people provide porta potties instead of use the terminal because of the quantity of people that could be there. I have no idea what your turnout's likely to be. It's nice to hear that at the last time you cleaned them up for us. If you use the terminal bathrooms, are you responsible for returning them back to pre-use condition?
We will clean up after ourselves and make sure everything's the way it was when we found it.
The trailers, you say going to be between the terminal and the EA building, is that on the ramp side or the parking lot?
Will it be against the curb by the bush, where the brush and stuff is there?
So on the parking lot side?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And any equipment you need then, presumably small enough just to grab and carry through the gates instead of drive the trailers out there?
Well, the trailer's going to be right there. No, the trailer's going to be on the ramp.
Okay, that was my question.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, they'll be on the ramp side.
And do we know the weight of those trailers and whether our ramp is engineered for that?
I do not know it, but I know that they used those trailers before when they were here. That's all I know.
We got a new ramp.
I know. I'm aware.
If you wouldn't mind confirming that it's within the load-bearing capacity of that,
I will do so.
Just general housekeeping. One last thing. On the insurance, I know I'm going to assume the EAA has good policies, but is it anticipated that we would be a named insured, not just shown as a rider that covers everyone sort of generally? Mr. Rowe.
I'll ensure that the CEAA or I'm sorry, the EAA does hold harmless the airport for on their insurance.
And the last question is, since we will essentially have access to the ramp from the parking lot to the public through to the ramp, are you bringing staff to make sure we don't have loose wanderers all over
yes,
the way?
Yes, we will have staff there to make sure everything's under control.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Don. Any other questions from the board?
Is there any flying activity that will require a TFR or suspension of other aviation activity?
I don't believe so, no.
Any comments from the public? Got one.
My name is Steve Lewis, and I'm the owner-president of Sterling Air, the Class 1 FBO on the airport, and also the manager of Jet Ranch. And I would just like to offer the EAA hangar space for your airplane, should you need it, and upon available space in Jet Ranch, we'd be happy to host you there.
Well, thank you very much for that, Steve. It's always nice to see the airport community pulling together to help each other out, and that's very much appreciated. Any other comments from the public? And I'd bring it back to the board, and we'd be in need of a motion on this item.
I move we approve the use of the airport terminal for the EAA B-17 event on September 22nd.
Okay, motion by Member Stotz. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Member Vice Chairman Peterson. Any further discussion? We stand in need of a vote. Or I guess technically back to the public for comment. And we don't have any further comment there. So all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, if there be any. Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Takes us to... Oh, yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Follett, and we'll look forward to having aluminum overcast with us next week, I suppose that is. Item number two, discussion and possible action to approve the use of the terminal building by the Reno 99s on October 3rd from 9 to noon for the Go Buy Air meeting. And who is representing the 99s tonight? And if not, I guess we'll turn to Tim.
Yeah, I don't see Ms. Walton here. I thought she was going to be here, but all I can do is relay on to her briefing to me, and it's a program called Go By Air, which is being conducted by the Reno Area 99s on Saturday Saturday, October 3rd from 9:45 a.m. to noon, and this is for the Girl Scouts. Their participants can learn about flying and earn a patch by doing several fun activities. Make an airplane, learn the language of aviation, and find out about many careers available in that are related to aviation. They are going to use the terminal exclusively for this program. They will not be venturing out on the ramp, but that's all that I know. I was hoping that she would be here to better brief us.
Okay, well, thank you. That's a good briefing from yourself, Tim. Again, this should be, I imagine, a fairly low-impact event, and obviously the 99s have used the terminal previously, and it's still standing. Any questions on this matter from the authority?
Tim, I realize you may not know this. When I read the original notes, it said it's for scouts. I thought, oh, that's good. I'm familiar with the 99s, but then later it narrows it down to Girl Scouts, but it also says you may come as an individual. I'm not real clear if this is a restricted event or if they're looking to encourage aviation across all children, boys and girls.
That I do not know. One thing that I can say is one of the people that's going to be involved in this event is Sandy Getz, who is a member of the 99s out of Minden, Gardnerville. And she has been very helpful in the airport authority, not the airport open house, and runs a 99 station in the terminal during the open house. And so she'll be maybe not spearheading the event, but she'll be deeply involved in it and very familiar with the process by which we operate the terminal.
Vice Chairman Peterson, is your question relevant to kind of any concern about, you know, shall we say, free and open access to the public and the use of the public space?
I'm not really sure I have a concern. It was more of a clarification. I mean, I would be happy if the Boy Scouts held an event. I would be happy if the Girl Scouts held an event. And I understand that 99ers is a female organization, but you know, you could also have a male organization, and if they're acting in aviation, I guess it assumed they would be reaching all of the public, not simply within their sex group. I don't necessarily care. I mean, the Boy Scouts are free to have their own event, so I don't know that they're ruled out of this. But it was partly to do, if we're asked to vote on this tonight, if we're being asked to support it, there's some question that says you may come as an individual. If there's an opportunity for a young male to get exposed to aviation and have a good time and have it be educational, is he going to show up and be said, no, you got to get out of here?
Well, we've always made the airport terminal open and available to any nonprofit, including the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and any other organization. As we know, we have the Civil Air Patrol coming to the meetings at the terminal now with their cadets. In the past, we've had the Navy Sea Cadets who took up space in the terminal and conducted drills in and outside of the terminal. So we've always made it open to any group, nonprofit, who wish to come. As far as the 99s, they are a female organization, and Girl Scouts, of course, they are a female organization. So whether it's open to others, I really can't say. But this is for the Girl Scouts.
Just to be clear, I'm not raising an objection on that point. I'm just a little confused where we're going with it.
Any other questions or comments from the authority? Comments from the public? Okay. Hearing none, then we'd be in need of a motion on this matter.
I move to approve the use of the airport terminal for the 99s events on October 3rd, 2015.
Motion by Member Shirk. Do we have a second?
I second the motion.
Second by Member Stotts. Any further discussion? Seeing none, at least we didn't need to go back to the public a second. Is that correct, Steve?
No, once the motion is made, it's all done at the front table.
I thought we did too.
Yeah.
When in doubt, you know better than I do. And we'll then move to a vote on the matter. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, if there be any. Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. This brings us to item number 3, discussion and possible action to approve a model aircraft operations at the model aircraft field, known as the Pony Express Radio Control Park, which I never knew, out east of the field, which is within 5 miles of the Carson City Airport. And I believe, is it Mr. Echetto? Please come on up and sign in for us and state your name for the record.
It's Dan Echetto.
Apologies, Mr. Echetto.
No problem. Has the board had a chance to look at the agreement or? Okay. Basically, there's two laws that we are concerned about. The first one is not really a law. It's from the FAA, and it's an advisory that says that we should advise airports within a five-mile radius that we are flying our model airplanes. The second one is actually from the state of Nevada, and it says we have to advise you and ask for a letter of agreement to state that we are in the premise. I guess the reason they did that is the great concern about drones. We don't fly drones. We are hobbyists. We fly under 400 feet, probably within a radius of 1,000 feet. If we can't see our airplane, it's gone to us. I mean, how do we get it back? You know, I don't know where it is. So we have to keep it close in. And as far as I know, we've never had a problem with full-size airplanes. We've even had a hang glider land there one time. Everybody was down on the ground waiting for him to come in. So,
thank you for that. I guess I will kick this off by saying that the reason why we're discussing this here tonight, because obviously the radio control field, dating back to me being a kid and Bob Brogan trying to teach me how to fly a radio control airplane, which I never learned how to do. Fortunately, I can kind of fly the real ones. You know, we've obviously been operating as partners here in the vicinity of each other for a very long time. So is the matter before us tonight because of the revised or the new advisory circular from the FAA that gets a little clearer or different? What's causing sort of the refresh here?
Steve Takis, Airport Council. I don't know what actually introduced it right at this moment, but the law goes into effect October 1st. The Nevada Revised Statute section that says certain protections need to be put in place as regards unmanned aircraft. I'm kind of a fan of the radio-controlled aircraft. I also find that it's easier to fly a real aircraft than it is to fly radio-controlled. But I have tremendous respect, and I think it's a lot of fun. The radio-controlled people have a lot of fun. The problem is the FAA has gotten into this very gray area between what is a radio-controlled airplane and what is an unmanned aircraft system. They have put in place guidelines, which have actually not been adopted as regs, but they've been published, and so they're somewhat being followed, for any unmanned aircraft that are 55 pounds or less. And among those criteria is they can't fly higher than 400 AGL. I've flown over the radio-controlled field many a time. I've looked and never seen a radio-controlled airplane from the air. I've seen them from the ground. Like if you go to the railroad station that we have there and you're waiting around for the train ride, you'll typically see some aircraft over there, some radio-controlled aircraft. But realistically, I don't think they present much of a problem. The agreement that letter agreement that they have proposed looks fine to me, with one exception. I think that it should include a requirement that they notify all the users of the radio-controlled airport that they are in the general approach area for aircraft to the Carson City Airport coming from the east, just so that they're aware of that. I think here education is really the key thing. If there's an airplane that's within 400 feet AGL coming over the radio-controlled area, that might be an airplane in distress, and the last thing you would want is for them to have an airplane in distress and then start seeing radio-controlled airplane around them. That would be disturbing. But as long as they know that that's the approach area, and if they saw a large airplane, they kind of bring their airplane clear of that, I think that that's probably the best we can do. The regs, by the way, or the AC from the FAA, says anybody within 5 miles. The proposed regs that the FAA hasn't adopted yet, but they've adopted as guidelines, say anybody shouldn't be operating within 5 miles except with the consent of the airport. And so what this letter agreement does is it basically says, yeah, it's okay with us. We don't really see a problem, but we are supposed to put in this agreement whatever procedures we think are appropriate to avoid problems. And the only one that I really, what's in the agreement right now, is we'll communicate with each other. And that's good. That's a good first step. I think it should have one additional provision that says that the users of the RC field should all be put on notice that they are in the approach area for the Carson City Airport, and to be aware of that, and if they see an airplane that's flying down around their altitude, they should stay clear of it, because that airplane probably is in distress.
And you're suggesting, Council Takis, maybe by way of, educational material circulated to the club members. Does everyone that use the field, is it just open public access, or is it only members of the club?
No, it is open public access.
So maybe by a signage or some sort of posting, obviously educational materials to the members of the club, as to the point that you're making about kind of this additional information, which I think is warranted and good, so that people know this. That notwithstanding, then the letter of agreement as it reads, in your opinion, Mr. Tegas, does it meet all of the kind of de minimis requirements for anything that the FAA, in its not just current legislation, but in the NPRM'd rule that's coming up, does it meet our requirements? I mean, there's no additional requirements like they have to have a radio monitoring the UNICOM frequency or anything like that. I mean, there are no particular stipulations that the operators of the RC field have to meet, is there? That go beyond this.
That's correct. There's okay. Nothing specific. All it says is you should have an agreement as to procedures. And certainly, if the RC airport were closer to our field, we might have different ideas, you know, because, as you know, we came up with different plans for helicopters and fixed-wing airplanes at our airport to deal with those. If RC aircraft were that close, we'd probably want to address that. But given their location up on the hill near the dump, I think that that's a fairly safe spot, other than the fact that it is kind of right underneath our GPS approach. But if you're flying that approach, you should be well above that 400 feet AGL. You should not have an incursion issue.
If I may.
You may.
As far as public access, I should have you note that we, in order to have access to that field, you have to have an AMA card stating you have insurance. You know, most people that go to Hobby Town or whatever and buy a little drone, they don't have a clue. And there, if we see somebody there that does not have insurance, they are kicked out.
Well, I do know that the AC specified that the agreement needs to be between a well, in this case, AMA, but a community organization, a sanctioned body, and the airport. That's and correct. So obviously that's what you guys represent as a chartered club of AMA and with AMA members. So let me turn it to the members of the authority for any questions and or comments you may have.
I have one, Mr. Chairman,
and that is
that given the the current concern regarding unmanned aircraft around airports, recent issues that have occurred at some of the bigger city East Coast airports, and this provisions that are published presently, should these kinds of problems increase, expand, or whatever, I think it would be reasonable to assume that the FAA and or the state might take further action. Might it not be reasonable to add language in the agreement that said this has to be resubmitted for approval every 12 months or something so it's not an in perpetuity? And should there be something in there regarding NOTAMs? I know Tim put something about trying to get a permanent NOTAM in place, but do we need anything in there since there does I think the regs require a NOTAM that aircraft are operating? Should that be in there and we have to specifically state what it is that people are likely or possibly encountering?
I understand the renewal every 12 months part. The NOTAM, are you suggesting that we have something in the agreement that says that we will be issuing a NOTAM? Is that?
I'm asking, is that something that we need to do since a NOTAM is required? Do we need to put down on paper that we're abiding by the proposal that a NOTAM be issued? That's a requirement anyway. Do we need to state in the agreement on our part that we are doing that?
I don't think we need to state it in the agreement, but I think it's a good suggestion from the airport manager that we put a permanent NOTAM out there and, you know, just file that with Lockheed Martin, just like we file any other NOTAM.
I have discussed this with Lee Oscar at the FAA FISDO, and he thinks it's also a good idea, and I've been formulating some wording. I'm going to put a little bit more into it before submitting it, and I will pass that email that proposed NOTAM to the Airport Authority, and we'll probably discuss it at the next meeting for approval. So this is an idea. I've gotten a lot of it written now, but this clarifies a little bit more that I could add to it. I don't want to get too all drawn out and lengthy about it, but just to let people know that it is there, so when they do plan their flights that they will know that we do have these type of operations close to the airport.
Then, once again, just in keeping with the regulations requiring us to put out a NOTAM, does that mean the agreement can't go into effect until such time as the NOTAM is published?
No, I think the agreement can go into effect now because they're going to continue flying. They're flying right now, and I can't imagine that we would take some action to stop them from doing that. But just to recap, and Mr. Clegg leaned across and said, does this agreement reference the AC? And as I looked at it again, it doesn't appear that it does. So I would suggest that the agreement be approved, but with the condition that it reference the AC, that there's notification to the users regarding the proximity of the Carson City Airport, and that it be renewed every 12 months. Because those are the things that I'm hearing, and that would be my recommendation, that you approve it on that basis.
And, Guy, just a note, I'm looking at the AC here. The AC within the clause around when flown within 5 miles of an airport, there's not a specific call for the creation of a NOTAM. I think it's a really good idea, and I think that seems to be the common theme. But when it comes to approving this, you know, if we come out of here approving this in principle and approving the operations pending a written agreement, you know, the NOTAM is not a specific requirement of the FAA for us to move forward and let them do that. So, so I had Member White was next, I believe, if you're still.
Question for Council. Does this circular or the new NRS give any kind of control or authority over the airfield there where the model airplanes are?
It doesn't give any authority to the Carson City Airport over their radio control field.
I just wanted to make that clear publicly.
And that's a good point. The other thing is there is another private airport right next to it. Well, it used to be a private airport. It's Parker Carson. And they didn't renew their BLM lease for part of their runway, so they have an extremely short takeoff and landing runway. And I don't know, I haven't talked to the guy who bought that property for probably a year or two, so I don't know what his plans are, but my suggestion to the radio control club is they should contact him too. I mean, if he's not using that as an airport, then there's probably no issue. If he is using it as an airport, he is much closer to their radio control field than we are.
Okay.
Yeah, and it does still show up on the sectionals as a public airport, and I think that it would also be a good opportunity, and as long as it does, it would be good to have an agreement or at least a contact with them in place. You know, if it's not going to be an airport anymore, I do hope that they'll go through the process of decommissioning it on the chart and so forth. Member Stotts, did you?
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions and comments. It seems like rather than worrying about having a NOTAM put out about the fact that there is a model aircraft field, if we were to put something out about the people that publish airport directories that haven't put in their comments for every little airport that they will be flying over the top of a place that has model airplanes, that would be a nice warning. It would be a nice advisory, and it wouldn't be anything legally binding or anything. So it would be good for pilots to know that activity is down there. Also, I have a question about the size of the aircraft that are operating out of there. I understand, maybe not at your facility, but there are some aircraft that have 6-foot wingspans. Well, I know a guy personally who operated a model F-4 with a 6-foot wingspan jet engine, and it went, you know, several hundred miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything like that out there?
We do. There's a fellow that works for Cathay Pacific. He's an airline pilot, and he brought it to the Carson City open house, airport open house, and flew it there. 6 feet, I don't think it's 6 feet, but it still goes pretty fast.
seems to me it'd be easy to break, bust 400 feet in a machine like that. But I presume since he's a Cathay Pacific's pilot, he would know better than busting that ceiling.
I've only seen him fly once out there. Usually he goes out to a dry lake bed to fly his airplanes.
So what is your largest aircraft that you operate out of there?
I think one gentleman has a glider, a motorized glider that is probably 6 to 8 feet. It probably only weighs 15 pounds of it, so, you know, they're balsa and plastic, so.
And I think to Member Stott's comment about the notes in the same spirit as a NOTAM that go into things like the airport's listing on AirNav or into the quick flight guides and stuff, doesn't that actually pick up typically, whether you have to push the information or they go out and scrape it? I mean, doesn't that typically reflect things like permanent NOTAMs on an airfield anyway? Or, I mean, would you kind of handle that as part of the same process?
Not so much NOTAMs, although they're like airnav.com. You'll pick up NOTAMs in there if you click on the NOTAM button. But it does typically put in remarks, items from the AFD, but not always. These are private organizations that I've had to call to say, hey, you know, we've got a 1,000-foot AGL pattern altitude now, and they're still publishing 800 feet, and it took me a while to get that realized, even though the AFD did publish the 1,000-foot AGL pattern altitude. So they may or may not. It eventually it'll get in published into their other systems, but they're not updated regularly.
Okay. Member Peterson, Vice Chairman Peterson.
Some of my notes have been sort of addressed here. To come back to it, I don't think that the NOTAM is regulatory required, but what I'm thinking as I'm hearing this is that it existed, there was no problem, but now we have a concerned public, and so some regulations are bubbling to the surface in the way of this AC, and what we're really being called on to do here is to do something reasonable to kind of bookend it and say, okay, yes, we're going to notify these people and that people. So here's what I suggest is, We could go overboard with this. We could send flyers to every citizen in Carson City, and it would be an inappropriate waste of effort. I would like to have a request that when we do the letter of agreement, that in the letter of agreement is that your club is required to post the way of a sign with language approved by the authority, that it notifies that the airport is over there and that they must fly below a certain altitude and within a certain radius of the airfield. That way we know that anybody that walks through your gate has had access to that information. And then we bookend it by posting the NOTAM. And I believe you're authorized to post NOTAMs. Is that correct, Tim?
That's correct.
And it would be a simple matter to say on a certain radial at a certain distance, we have model aircraft operating below 400 feet in that distance. Now, whether we extend that to the AFD, if that's not a difficult process, I'd suggest to do that. But I don't know that it's an appropriate or measured amount of effort that we contact AOPA and every private little aviation book out there to tell them about something that hasn't been a problem for 30 years. So anyway, and then once that's all in here, then I think in addition to the AC mention and the one-year renewal, frankly, I wouldn't object to a longer renewal. I don't see this thing changing unless the AC changes, in which case if we have a letter of agreement that we would know about, then we could contact them and say, something's triggered an earlier review. So I wouldn't object to a longer renewal period pending changes to the AC.
Well, another way to handle that last part, Don, is you know, I presume that we retain the right to rescind this agreement at any time. I mean, if we were subjected to some FAA, you know, I mean, 9/11 style thing that says, okay, there are going to be no, you know, obviously we would, I mean, I'm just pulling that one out of the hat, you know, need to be able to break this agreement. So I think it's it is inferred, or maybe it needs to be stated that, you know, this is, you know, can be terminated by the airport at any time. And what I'm really getting at there is not that we do that by choice, but it gives us then also the ability to amend it as necessary as law dictates. Would you think that there should be language in there, as now that we're wordsmithing a bit?
Yeah, I do. And as I'm thinking about the renewal time, I'm in agreement with Member Peterson on that. The only thing that I don't know is the technology is advancing pretty quickly, and when I go to the conferences on unmanned aircraft, which I've been to several now, I'm amazed at how quickly the technology is moving. And so 12 months from now, we may be looking at a very different kind of radio-controlled device out there than what we're looking at today. And that would be the only thing that would kind of push me back toward the 12 months. That's the only thought I have on that.
That was why I had suggested we describe it not in terms of aircraft out there, but they have to stay below 400 feet and within whatever your radius is that has worked. We don't care what they fly in, that's that little bubble.
Just,
yes, sir.
For your information, there's 300 clubs across the United States that are affected by having to be within 5 miles of an airport. And Nevada and a few other states are the only ones that have this type of agreement. I think if something catastrophic would happen, like 9/11 again, and it was caused by a model airplane, I think the FAA would be all over it, and I don't think you would have to worry. They would probably ground us in a heartbeat.
Yeah, no, I'm just referencing if there was some, you know, immediate change in policy that came from the FAA where we needed to sever these agreements. I'm just using the draconian case. You know, we need to have the ability to modify or terminate this agreement at our discretion.
And I guess the other scenario would be we enter the agreement and then the Cathay Pacific pilot or some friend of his grabs his plane and starts flying it in an irresponsible manner, and we need a way to be able to address that clearly. And if we have the right to cancel this, that's a pretty good leverage for us to be able to address it.
Okay. Member White.
Considering the number of changes and the nature of the changes we're talking about, have we risen to the level of substantial changes in the proposed agreement so that we should restructure this and bring it back to reconsider it?
The things that we've added are fairly simple to add. I'm not really thinking it would require us to react on this like next month or something like that. I think you have enough information. The issue's been noticed in an adequate manner. I think you could vote on it now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I would agree with counsel on this, that the suggested possible action is to approve the operations. And in our notes, of course, we've looked at then work with staff to put the agreement in place, because we can continue to endorse operations at the airfield and not be in violation of the FAA or NRS at this time. The written agreement has to be in place per the NRS starting when? October 1?
I'm pretty sure that statute goes into effect October 1, yeah.
Okay, well, there's no reason why we wouldn't have this signed by October 1. What we would want to do is, you know, make a motion then that I would suggest that conducts that approval, that staff work to finalize a NOTAM and this agreement, and then, you know, authorize a representative of the airport to execute that agreement, whether that's Tim or whether that's myself, however you'd like to do that.
That would work fine either way. The one thing is back to the 400 feet and kind of like boxing it in. The regs for radio-controlled aircraft and their guidelines, those AMA guidelines, talk about line of sight. And so I don't know how we relate that back to an actual like number of feet, because some people have better eyes than other people. A lot of people have better eyes than me, so. I guess I'm just throwing that out as if there were a way we could nail it down into a number of feet, I think that would enhance the suggestion that you've made, Member Peterson.
Well, the agreement is written, acknowledges, you know, there was the question of does it acknowledge the AC? Well, it acknowledges, according to Section 336, Special Rule for Model Aircraft in the, you know, the current proposed Modernization Act. I believe that in the text of that, the advisory circular is maybe referenced and some of the box definition, the 400-foot altitude, the 55-pound limit, the speed limit, I believe there's also a speed limit in there, are all recognized. And I think that, you know, just to be clear, there's one thing which is the altitude restriction. The other is the distance restriction, and that is defined as line of sight there. So I don't know, you know, if we want to really get into the weeds or the mud, I should say, of being more prescriptive than the FAA. I mean, we'd want this to track with whatever the FAA and or NRS guidance is. I mean, we don't need to be crafting new law here. So if, you know, I'm certainly comfortable with, you know, abiding by the requirements that the FAA has come up with and NRS.
Add some clarity. Line of sight could include use of binoculars. Line of sight, as I understand it, means it's not over the horizon. So I understand not wanting to write new regulations. When I fly in Class G, I'm supposed to know it's 1 mile of visibility. Do you know how to do that? I mean, you know, we do what we can to be sure we don't create big problems for ourselves and other people. And I don't mind acknowledging that the people who are expert in their RC aircraft are flying in a manner that they are specified to fly. Now, how, if they're at 400 or 390 or 450 doesn't necessarily bother me a lot. But what I would do, and I don't know if this is where we are, I would be happy to make a motion that we adopt this agreement after inclusion of the requirement for local signage that specifies their location with respect to the airport. And that they operate within 400 feet vertical AGL and 400 feet radius of the center of the airport, and that it be set up, if I'm hearing this correctly, Steve, that it be a, let's say, 3-year for renewal, but that we have the rights unilaterally to either rescind or modify and notify you of such changes.
Can we get some feedback? Is the 400 feet, is that going to work for you guys?
No, 400 is not going to work.
Okay, so
our runway is 660 feet long.
Okay.
So
how far from the airport horizontally do these radio-controlled aircraft go?
Paul, do you have an idea?
We could easily say, if you'd like something on there, say, you know, basically half a mile, you know, 2,500 feet, something like that, and I think you got it covered.
I agree with Chairman Hutter, or, again, almost any other distance that we're all in agreement has been your standard practice. That's all we're looking to put on a piece of paper here.
Well, our standard practice is covered by the AMA guidelines. I don't know if I'm hoping you don't want to get too restrictive over them and also the FAA. And
what we're trying to do here is to put together a piece of paper that's specific on what we're concerned about, right, and describes for your operators as well as pilots checking the NOTAMs where it is and within what area. If you provided us the AMA distance, that's probably okay, but I don't know what it is. Is it 1,000? Is it 1,500 feet? Is there a number?
They don't specify a distance. It's line of sight. Once you lose visual reference of your airplane, it's probably going to crash because you can't tell where it is.
Well, then I kind of have to object to that, because back with counsel here, aircraft and technology or unpiloted aircraft is changing rapidly. Now, you could be an AMA member. You could have a lot of unpiloted aircraft with lots of interesting computers on board, so it's stable and it can home its way home, mm-hmm, and it is, by definition, line of sight while it's at 600 feet over our runway.
But now, sir, you've said that it's a drone.
I haven't.
It is, because we semi-manually fly.
Right.
There are some people in the world that use the virtual reality goggles, If they're AMA approved, they have to have a spotter. That spotter has to have line of sight. Yeah, they do have equipment that does GPS. I know of nobody at our location that uses that.
We have to be specific, not for your current membership, but in somewhat in anticipation of what's here today and what's happening. And again, there's a difference in line of sight and insight. Those are, to us, we operate radios that only operate line of sight.
Right.
That's 40 miles away. So line of sight is not a definition that we could adopt that gives protection to the airport environment. We would need a different statement of that. And typically it would be a distance or something else quantifiable. It could be 1,000 feet. It could be 1,500 feet. I don't have a lot of concern over that. But line of sight includes our runway. And again, whether it's, I didn't know you guys had artificial vision. That's even scarier. Because we don't know where it's going to go. And and I'm still content that it's a hobbyist's radio-controlled aircraft. It's just cooler than it used to be when I was growing up. But I think we need to notify via our NOTAM and your sign that you will operate within X, vertically and horizontally, and pick a number that you're confident will satisfy all your members. I'm not bothered about what that will be.
I don't mind the half mile. And that should more.
Is that going to overlap our GPS approach?
I don't know. I'd have to plot it to find out. How far are we from? How far is the airport from the RC field?
The end of the property, not the runway or the middle of the runway, but the end of your property is 10,000 feet to the beginning of ours.
We ran a GPS with Brian Fitzgerald, and from the airport reference point at Carson City to the center of the airpark, the model airplane field, is 2.7 nautical miles on a 068 magnetic bearing from the Carson City or to the RC field.
Can I suggest that since the gentleman from the club said that they lose control of them at 1,000 feet, that let's take their 1,000 feet and say that's it. If they need to amend it, they can come back for some reason and do it. But that keeps them out of our airspace and we're giving them the ability to operate as they're currently operating. If they want to go beyond that, because there's new technology with magic eyes and things like that and GPS gizmos, then we can come back and deal with it. But their suggestion, at 1,000 feet, they're going to lose it, so maybe 1,000 feet is the number we ought to. And I agree with Don that we probably do have to have something because there's no guarantee it's going to crash when they lose sight of it. It might go up before it goes crashes, which would put it right into the approach path.
Bear in mind, I'm looking down the road. We get some ill-advised person flying what you might call a drone. We just think it's a radio-controlled aircraft. We don't know. And some student of mine flying in on 27 runs afoul of him over there somewhere. He's doing a practice GPS approach. And let's just say we said, well, it's okay, it's your line of sight. Now we are complicit in putting your aircraft where he has killed somebody. We need to have a definition that respects the boundaries of our aircraft.
Okay, so I think that this is a good opportunity to ask if there's any other public comment, because I think there is. Okay, that was brief. I think that what Member Williams and Member Peterson are bringing up is very important, okay, and that is that if we have an opportunity without overly constraining the operations to decisively keep the radius of operations that we're authorizing out of our approach path, that's a good idea. If half a mile does it, if 2,000 feet does it, that's great. If that would make a difference where 1,000 feet would do and 2,000 feet would put it, you know, in a compromised place, I don't want to go there. But I'm hearing that 2,000 feet feels more comfortable. We were talking about half a mile. What does that circle look like relative to the extended centerline of the runway?
We may have crossed the line that Member White was asking about earlier, which is now we probably have an issue that we need additional information on to answer that we don't have here.
I mean, I can get my phone out if someone wants to take the con, but, you know, I mean, we can look at this on a map. But can't we kind of go forward with this, with that as a TBD, you know, to fill in what that number is going to be, you know, so we can keep things moving?
Yeah, we could do that as long as you give us adequate direction as to how we go about determining the number. I mean, if you just say, yeah, you guys, you and Tim go figure it out, that's not okay. But
okay, but in no case more than 2,000 feet.
I'm just thinking that the operators are probably operating from the center of the airport, and my gut is just telling me if we do it 1,500 feet from the center of the airport, that should be sufficiently past the 1,000 foot that was first estimated as a line of sight limit. I'm just thinking that should be good.
RVR 1,500.
We're not going to measure.
Are you comfortable buying into a 1,500 foot? And I'm going to state again, to my knowledge, there's been no problems. We're in favor of you being there. I'd like bringing my grandson out there. We're fine with where we're going with this. But we need a boundary that can be communicated. And if you're out of it and you crash a real airplane, then there's other issues you're going to face. That's all we're saying here. Now, I don't have a problem with 2,000 feet, but it's going to delay this process. 1,500 probably won't. I would put it into an amended motion that it would be 1,500 feet pending confirmation by the authority or the manager that does not intrude into the instrument or visual approaches to our airport.
I'm okay with that.
Okay, well, I think we have the makings of a motion here. So let me ask if there's any additional public comment at this time. And if not, then... Don, it sounds like you're ready to roll with a motion. And I just mean you actually seem to have the competent formulation of it together to capture the business of an approval with staff to finalize an agreement as drafted, but with, et cetera, et cetera.
I move that we approve the model aircraft operations at the RC field located next to the Carson City dump, and that staff work with them to put in place a written agreement, and that written agreement, as presented to the board, shall be modified to include a requirement for a sign posted at the field notifying of the local airport operations and distance, and that the operations be restricted to 400 feet AGL and 1,500 feet from the center of the airport. That's the end of the motion. I will comment that us posting a notum is not part of the agreement. That's what we choose to do, and I would suggest that we task the manager to post the appropriate notum.
Okay, so moved, and do we have a second to the motion?
I second the motion.
Okay, second by Member Williams. May I offer then a friendly amendment to the motion, because I think there's just one element, and that is that the agreement as presented also be amended to provide language giving the airport the unilateral ability to withdraw from the agreement.
And didn't we agree earlier that we wanted to include language from the AC?
Yes, and language from the AC, those two items... And if Member Peterson would accept that amendment to his motion.
I certainly accept the amendment from the chairman and add to it my request that we add the AC.
And then.
Does Member Williams agree with that?
I agree with that.
All right. Okie doke. With that all heard, any further discussion? Seeing none, we're in need of a vote. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, if there be any? Hearing none, the motion is approved, and the radio control operations continue. And we'll look forward to working with you to get that final language in place. And then I believe Mr. Rowe, on behalf of the airport, can execute that. Thank you.
Thank you.
This brings us to item number four, discussion and possible action to consider the request for proposal from security patrol companies to consider the recommendations of the airport manager with regard to analysis of those proposals and to award the airport security contract for a period of 5 years. Manager Rowe.
Okay, as in my briefing previously to the board members, I've received three responses to the RFP, ESI out of Reno, High Sierra Patrol and Capital City Patrol, both out of Carson City. All three proposals were fairly complete in reference to the requirements of the RFP. ESI security, as previously discussed, meets a few of the provisions, not all of them, but most of them. The one thing that I had a little problem with their RFP was that they issue citations for trespassing, but I'm sure that if they were awarded a contract, they could be instructed to detain trespassers for the Sheriff's Department. The estimated cost of ESI services is $25 per visit or $9,100 per year. That's a considering one patrol per night. High Sierra Patrol, they provide warning signs for their services. They meet the provisions of the RFP. And their term didn't specify a five-year contract. However, their term was 3 months, and it's renewable after 3 months. Up to three patrols per night for 20 to 30 minutes per patrol at $975 per month, which is $11,700 per year. Capital City Patrol meets all the provisions of the RFP, and they provide three sporadic patrols during the night and early morning periods. Patrols are unmarked cars, no flashing lights, and their monthly rate is $300 per month at $3,600 per year. I've looked over the three proposals, which each member has a copy of, and recommend to the authority that Capital City be retained for a new five-year contract. It came down to numbers, and Capital City just had the best numbers. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay, to the authority, Member Peterson.
Do any of them, including your recommended capital, have any annual increases, or is this $300 per month for the five-year period?
We have been contracted with Capital City for the last 5 years, and outside of a period where we increase their coverage, they've been happy with the $300 per month, and there are no increases considered and none expected.
Maybe I'm not clear. We're contemplating a contract. A contract is always specific in the performance and the value exchange for that. So contemplated is a term I don't understand here. Are we proposing, or are you proposing, a contract with Capital City for 5 years at this rate with no increases?
That's correct, I am. No increases are considered.
Just a couple of notes here. Can you tell me the name of the principal at ESI that makes the decisions there?
The person that I contacted, his name was Mike Hendy. He's the CEO of ESI.
Mike Handy?
Hendy, H-E-N-D-I.
Okay, E-N-D-I. And the name of the principal at High Sierra?
Patrick Brennan.
And the principal at Capital City?
Principal at Capital City is Virgil Hammond.
Hammond? And when you received the bids from these, was there a private opening, or has there been any communication to any of the three regarding the bids of the other two?
The only contact that I've had was with Virgil Hammond and Mr. Hendy at ESI, who had called to see how the things were going with the RFP, and I told him that we would be discussing that with the authority.
Was there any relating of information contained in the bids to any of them prior to tonight?
No.
Do we have or will we have in the new period any confirmation of performance. They say they're making some number of visits a night. How do we know?
As we've been contracted with Capital City over the last 5 years, I receive a weekly report from them on their patrols, any comments that they may have of anything unusual happening, and that's probably going to continue. As far as the number of nightly patrols, I don't believe that's in the report, but I can always ask them to include that if they so are chosen to continue.
Well, again, I'm responding to what you've had here. The contract proposed in your hands from Capital City is to provide 3 sporadic patrols. Okay, that would be in the contract. It would be a separate action to confirm that we, as managers of our side of the contract, confirm that they're in fact doing it. And if the only system now is through their reports, fair enough. But then that should be in the reports, not just their findings. You know, if we're paying somebody the hour, we should have a time clock. It's just that simple. I'm not saying an actual time clock for these guys, but some way to confirm that they are, in fact, doing what we're asking to do. The absence of a break-in isn't proof that the security is taking place. Just on a slightly related note, does Carson City Airport have signs posted anywhere noting that tampering with aircraft is a federal crime?
I don't believe, against the fence. There is inside the terminal, but not anywhere else posted that I've noticed, no.
I remember seeing at many airports I've been at lots of those signs, any place you might be tempted to shinny over the fence, a clear notice on what the penalties are if you damage an aircraft. It's a pretty serious deal. Those are my questions. I'm done.
No, Mr. Tegas?
Yeah. I've just had an opportunity today to review the actual proposed contract from Capital City.
I think I know where you're about to go.
Go ahead.
Okay. And it says under the duration of contract, a 5-year contract beginning on the date written and is executed below, rates are guaranteed not to increase during the first year for basic service unless additional services are requested or mandated by the client, at which time a written and approved addendum shall be attached to this contract. It doesn't say anything about the second through the fifth years. In addition, it is $300 a month, but they're proposing a payment basis, which might be okay with us, I don't know, to be paid biweekly, and a 7.5% late fee applies, and then they state that this is a financial incentive offered by them to us, that's only being offered to us. I don't know what that means.
We have always paid biweekly, $150 per every 2 weeks we receive an invoice, and that amounts to $300 a month.
Are we paying in advance of services or after services?
No, these are after services.
After services. Well, I would just comment, again, that was part of the point of my asking you if these elements were in there, and I'm getting contradictory information. I would suggest that an acceptable contract that meets our RFP states the price for 5 years. Yes. If there is a definitive increase that they wish to propose for us to consider, fine, but this is vague. This almost sounds like they come back after 1 year, one day, and say, oh, it's now $900, you know, because you asked me to circle the parking lot once or whatever the reason is. I'm not happy about that. And the other thing is I would reject outright the 7.5% late fee, and I would go back to a monthly payment. There's a cost of transactions anywhere, whether it's Tim's time or cutting checks or all the rest of that. That sounds to me like a business that's not liquid, not viable. I certainly have no objection to paying on time and have it be monthly, but I'm very nervous about the terms I'm hearing here.
There's one other term I just wanted to mention, which it says client responsibilities. That would be like our responsibilities. The Carson City Airport and or the Carson City Airport Authority shall provide Capital City Patrol and Transit and its chief executive officer and special officers with any and all special orders on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis as needed or required. I don't know needed or required by who.
if it's us saying we need something on a daily basis, sure, we would expect to provide them to that promptly. But the way it's worded, I don't know if it's something that where they could say, hey, we need you to provide us with whatever instructions are happening on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. And now we're talking about some administrative duties on our part that could be very time-consuming. I just don't know what it means. That's
well, fair enough. The way I was listening to you read it, it sounded like we could request them via special orders. You know, the president's flying in. We need them to come carry the water bottles to the airplane, for which they should charge us. I don't actually – I'm not bothered by that direction, but if the language is vague, we need to bounce that back.
Well, and you know, I don't recall whether the RFP specifically indicated a firm fixed price for the period of performance, but it should. If it didn't say that, then I can't very well say that this proposal is non-responsive, because if it wasn't asked that way, and I don't recall what the wording was, but if we were to, for example, approve the Capital City Patrol contract, or would make that selection, it would have to be, I mean, just as an example, contingent upon that being a firm fixed price for the period of 5 years, in my opinion. Similarly, I wanted to kind of make the comment as we looked at the different proposals that I believe it was ESI, again, something I'm not exactly comfortable with in their proposal. I mean, you have your notes, Tim, summarizing the proposals, but ESI's proposal is titled Estimate for the $25 per stop. The estimated cost of security for the Carson City Airport is $25 per stop. That's not a proposal, okay? And, you know, these are kind of loosey-goosey. And I think in the High Sierra Patrol case, I think it was a firm fixed price, if I'm not mistaken. $975 per month. Payment due within 30 days, 5% late fee. Oh, a 3% rate increase will be automatic. That's what it was, automatically assessed on an annual basis. Okay, so that's responsive. You know, it says it's 975, and then year two it's plus three, and through three it's plus three. So we would take that into account in evaluating this, and that needs to be reflected in the notes. So we've kind of got things all over the place right now, and there's a lot of assumptions that would have to be made. You know, these guys, if they'd agree to this, those guys, if they'd confirm that. So we kind of have some open-ended things here.
My gut says that we would like the low-price guys, but that we need to have a real competent contract that we can live with. My suggestion, and perhaps subject to the board discussion, is that we send you back to talk to Capital City and say we need a proposal from you that is responsive. We need a firm price for the five-year period. We might well entertain an annual escalation of a reasonable amount. I would like to see the efficiency of our total organization improve, so I would rather go to monthly billing and not biweekly. You know, that's not what you do. A 7.5% late fee is not acceptable to me. Put something down like 1.5%, but you're going to pay on time, so it shouldn't be a problem. But then you get into these claims of, well, I didn't get it until whenever. Make it a number that's a commercially normal number, like 1.5%, not 7.5%, and a monthly payment, a firm fee, no estimates, and that any increased billings must be approved in advance by the airport authority.
Member White.
Are any of the principals to these companies in the room tonight? Thank you.
Yes, that's a fantastic question.
What group
question.
Do you represent?
Capital City Patrol, sir.
Thank you.
But okay, yeah, come.
I think
it would be appropriate for you to come up. I think so, right, counsel? I mean, I don't know.
Can I, for
this discussion, okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Member White, go ahead.
I have to tell you, in reading these contracts, I have some pretty substantial concerns about every one of them. Our responsibility here is to choose a contractor that has a responsible proposal, and I don't find any of these to necessarily be responsible. Since
High Sierra Patrol is here. There are several problems in there.
Capital City Patrol.
I'm sorry, Capital City. Several problems in there. Number one, I certainly cannot imagine how this can be done for $10 an hour. And secondly, hopefully not to embarrass anybody, but one of the primary responsibilities on that on the airport during these patrols is to deter crime. In your proposal, you repeatedly talk about that you will deter crime. You don't even use the right word in your proposal for what your primary operation is going to be. I personally will not vote for any of these proposals tonight.
Member White?
Yes.
No, I'm just, yeah. Member Williams?
I was concerned a little bit about the question that Don asked, and that was that it doesn't appear that there has been a public opening of bids for these RFPs. And I seem to recall when we got into the paving issues a couple of years back between Granite and one of the other suppliers that there was a dispute over. We were down to hundreds of dollars out of millions of dollars in the way in which things were. I can't remember all the details, but I just remember there was an awful lot of deliberation and there had been a public disclosure to all of the parties that this was occurring, and they were invited back to the meeting. And we had Granite and the other folks here, who one was the low bidder, and they didn't get it because they had a minor error in their in the way they laid stuff out. And my question is, are we required to have had a public opening of bid and notification to the bidders as to what the results of the bids were back to all the parties, and then let them come and address us if they choose to? It doesn't appear that that happened here.
That has not happened this way, and it was by design. The requirement to have the public bid and do that whole process is triggered by $25,000 contract per year. We're talking less than $25,000. So what we did is we kind of simplified that process. Instead of just going out and saying, hey, what will you charge us, which is what we could have legally done, we simplified the bidding process so that we knew it would be fair. And so we issued a notice that has a deadline for submitting bids and a process by which the airport manager would make a recommendation and bring it back to the authority. So we did it in a process that we thought was fair and transparent and safe, but were we required to do it that way? No.
I forgot about the $25,000, so I withdraw the question.
I think it's a good point, because we do want to always make sure we're fair and above board. I think the issue here is we got to make sure that if you're going to award a contract, that there's good communication. We both understand what's going on.
Well, and if I may interject on
– and if you would, state your name for the record.
Virgil E. Hammond, Chief Executive Officer, Capital City Patrol and Transit here in Carson City. We've been providing your security services, obviously, for the past 5 years. And effectively doing so. With reference to the financial cost of $300 per month, that is for the term of the five-year contract. If we feel that we deserve maybe a higher incentive or a higher rate of pay in the future, we will definitely come back and speak with you and maybe make a suggestion that we'd like to up the rate a little bit. But as far as this contract is concerned and what was provided in this RFP, it is $300 a month for 5 years. We also had the comment that you don't see how this can be done for $10 an hour. Well, first of all, it's not $10 an hour, it's $10 a day, to be honest with you. We service over 1,400 addresses around and that pretty much encompass the airport. We are always there. When we say 1 to 2 private patrol officers, we may have one officer or two officers on duty who overlap, and a third officer in the field who is actually supervisor, which is most of the time it's me. So with reference to the specific amount of hits, the minimum of 3 hits, you are definitely getting that. And they are on a change-up method of operation. So the bottom line is the amount that is in this contract per month for the airport authority is a very good rate. And I can see and I can understand why you're concerned with such a low rate. But with the number of clientele that we have surrounding the airport and in the Carson City area, the number of officers that we have in the field, we are able to accomplish what you require and then some. And we have taken very good care of this airport the last 5 years, and we have curbed any incidental and criminal activity probably at about 98% right now. The last major incident, other than the airplane taking a nosedive during the daytime, was a burglary to Sterling Aircraft, which we believe was isolated. There have been no further reports or acts or observations of any forced entry or illegal entry to the airport. So therefore, we feel that we have done our job the past 5 years as your security service in providing the necessary services for the safety and security of persons and property.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond. And before I recognize Vice Chairman Peterson, I appreciate your response to the questions that have been asked or the concerns that have been raised. I have to come back to, on page two, duration of contract. It says a five-year contract beginning on the date written and as executed below. Rates are guaranteed not to increase during the first year for basic service.
Correct. Okay. And basically, every year thereafter, it basically goes into a month-to-month situation. We're not going to sit there and increase every month after a year.
But you're saying this is not a guaranteed firm fixed price for 5 years?
No, it is. The $300 a month that we are charging you is for the five-year term. You know, we guaranteed not to increase it the first year. We may not guarantee, you know, we may not come back the second year. You know, there may be another recession. There might be purse strings pulled.
Right, so you're not guaranteeing $300 a month for 5 years.
I am. I am guaranteeing $300 a month for 5 years. With the opportunity, if we feel that we can come back to the airport authority and increase our service amount.
Okay, but that's not guaranteeing a firm fixed price for 5 years, sir. I mean, I'm sorry. I unless I'm missing something, those are two different concepts.
I think we just need to reword it. It says what you're saying right now, which is you're guaranteeing the rate for 5 years.
Yes.
If we request additional services, you would expect to be paid for those.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Well, you could just say rates are guaranteed not to increase for basic service unless additional services are requested or mandated by the client. But it doesn't say that. It says during the first year.
Okay. We'll pull that. We'll amend that.
Okay.
To satisfy the board.
I just want to not be antagonistic. I'm just
reading
this.
No, 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 no. I understand. It's all business. Okay. It's all business and legality, and that's...
Yeah. Member Peterson.
Questions. Are you okay with the 1.5% late fee?
Yes, I don't have a problem with that, and I'd like to explain further the biweekly payment opposed to a monthly payment. Biweekly payment actually offers a built-in discount for the people who want to pay biweekly according to monthly. If you pay monthly, it's a little higher. That's just our industry. That's just what we do. Capital City Patrol and Transit is basically a 100% debt-free company and works off clientele income. In other words, if we want specialized equipment, new equipment, new duty gear, what have you, we go to our clients collectively and we ask them, look, this is what we would like to have. This is what we would like to upgrade. Are you guys in for this? And on top of that, we'll offer you a 5% discount for the remainder of the year. Sure, there you go. Us as a company are not spending money. The client is getting the service in which they paid for, above and beyond, actually, and everybody's happy. So bottom line is we operate as a debt-free company, and we have since the second year. And it works out very well with our clients on how we arrange things and how we work things. And all I can say is that it works out very well.
Question on that last point.
Member Pearson had the hand up. We'll go after Member Williams after that.
Just to reiterate what I went before, we have a big ship here, too.
Sure.
And we have a task to reduce our cost and become more efficient.
Absolutely.
And so I'm putting my voice forward that I will be most strongly in favor of a contract for 5 years that at a fixed price for the entirety of the 5 years, no coming back, paid monthly. And this is not the only action that we expect to take through our manager to improve the efficiency of our operation and therefore lower the costs. We just can't run around paying our vendors on different schedules. We need to have
check runs. No, I understand.
So I just want you to hear my position on that. Secondly, just a brief story. I had an argument with an old friend of mine the other day, and I was telling him, yeah, I live in Carson City. I don't lock my back door. He says, oh, my God, aren't you worried? And he says, I lock mine every day, and it's worked 100% in the 8 years I've lived here. I said, it's never worked. If the neighborhood kid wanted in your house, he would have been in your house. Locking the door doesn't change that. What's happened is there's been no one try to go into this house, and that's not proof that locking it works. I grew up in an industry where we had a lot of theft, a lot of internal theft, and we learned visible presence is what deters the present, or the theft. If people think they might be caught, it drops about 90% of the risk right out of it. So unmarked cars, to me, are a disadvantage of your offer. If there's going to be 3 visits a day or night, great. They ought to be roaming around, labeled so-and-so security, and some kid over there thinking, I think I'll go look at an airplane and see what I can get, and here goes, nah, maybe not this place. Unmarked cars, to me, are not a deterrence.
Thank you, Member Peterson, Member Williams. As always, Tamar is still upright back there. I didn't know what might have happened.
I almost lost my
mixture here. Okay. Member Williams.
The question that I think you kind of, well, the question, your comment that passed over was one of the ones that caused a serious problem before, and that was asking us to front money for services that you might get in exchange for a 5% discount. As I understand it, we got in a lot of trouble last time because that basically boiled down to the Airport Authority granting a loan to a vendor, and we're specifically prohibited from doing that. So this idea of advanced payments for discounts is not a possibility.
Okay, and that's fine, and I understand that, but I don't see it as being considered a loan. Other than maybe payment in advance for services with a discount. An actual loan would actually be documented as a loan and written as such. This was not. This was written as a service to be provided at a discount rate for payment paid in advance. That's all it was. It wasn't anything major or looking for anything special or additional. It was just a suggestion that actually came to fruition.
I'm not suggesting there was anything nefarious. I'm simply pointing out that it is a problem for the airport to do that. I will let counsel comment further if he
feels
like it.
And I understand your position.
But it's just, it's something that can't be part of the contract,
sure.
Nor can it be
part of the
consideration.
And not every client of ours can participate in that request as well. Some may be higher-paying accounts. Some may be lower-paying accounts. The higher-paying accounts will participate. The lower accounts can't. That's just how it is financially with people.
Anything specific on that, Council?
Nothing specific. Just in general, we can't make loans. That's just the bottom line.
And whether it's structured as a written formal loan or not, does that kind of flirt with the line advance payment for services as Member Williams is suggesting?
Yeah, it does. It's a gray area. You know, it's like what courts do is they'll say it doesn't matter what you call it; it's what it really is. And so we should be careful to avoid that practice, I guess.
Sure.
I do have a question, if I may. Billing cycle, monthly billing cycle, what were the days that you were specifically thinking as far as billing on the first payable by the 15th? Does that work for your calendar?
I'm very flexible. I write the checks all month long.
Tim, just a comment on that. and it might be something we work on out of here, most vendors are going to have a monthly statement, and it is a general statement, and generally it's going to track a calendar, and generally payment, depending on the vendors, due by the 10th or the 15th. So I would encourage us to adopt a standard commercial practice, and so I would. We need some in-house tuning. That's kind of what I'm referring to here. So I would have suggested a monthly billing payable on the 15th should fit a commercial standard.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. Are there any other specific questions for Mr. Hammond from the authority while he's up? Okay. Hearing none, any comments or questions from the public? Okay. Bringing it back to the authority, indeed, our business tonight is to consider these proposals and to choose one if any of them are adequate in our eyes, adequate responses to the RFP and meet the needs that we're looking to fill. Mr. Hammond's had the opportunity, I think, to answer some questions right on the spot and effectively modify or clarify, let's just say, we'll modify in a couple cases, a couple of items here. And I think that we are not out of line in regarding those modifications, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Takis, given the process that we used. Okay, I mean, Mr. Hammond's here, others are not here. You know, this is okay for us to be tweaking this?
Yes, it's okay for you to tweak this.
Okay. So we basically have a somewhat amended or modified proposal in certain areas from Capital City Patrol. We have the proposals as they stand from the other two respondents. And we'd be in need to of consideration of a motion to approve one of these proposals. Would be the next item.
I would like
action.
To propose that we accept the proposal from Capital City in general, but that we direct him to work with Steve Takis to prepare a refined contract that addresses our modifications for subsequent approval by the authority.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sorry? Okay, we have a motion from Member Peterson. Do we have a second of that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, seconded by Mr. Williams, coming Member Williams. So back for discussion. And that would be, Council Takis understands, I think at this point, are you unclear on any of the modifications that we've been looking at or the clarifications that need to be made?
No, I took notes as you were discussing it, and I think I'm very clear on them.
And if I understand then, Member Peterson, the motion then in the implies that we would need to, are we going to give provisional approval that that this could be executed by Manager Rowe once Mr. Takis and Mr. Hammond make the modifications, or does it need to come back at our next month's meeting?
I would accept that as a modification of my motion if the language suits Council Takis's notes on the modifications, then I would be happy that the manager executed it at that point.
And Member Williams, what are your feelings on that? Is it agreeable?
I'm okay as long as Steve and Don are okay that we've got all the details down. That's all. There's a lot because there's a lot of changes there.
Yes, sir, and I've also noted them. So.
Okay. So that is the motion that's before us. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we would be in need of a vote. All in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Note that Member White has voted no. I believe that all other members have voted yes. That motion carries by 5-1. And we will look forward to seeing the revised language that you guys come up with. And I will review that to ensure that, you know, everything is captured, at least the way I remember it here. And then we'll look forward to carrying on. So thank you very much for being with us tonight and for your proposal, Mr. Hammond. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I look forward to wrapping that up.
I appreciate your time.
I keep getting it off. Agenda item number 5 is discussion and possible action to dispose of abandoned and derelict aircraft, the Albatross, Grumman Albatross, serial number 51067, owned by Yvette Weaver, as a result of her failure and refusal to remove that aircraft despite a mail demand, and to authorize the airport manager to arrange for scrap sale of said aircraft or other disposal as appropriate. And Council Tagus.
Yeah, we gave notice to her. We noticed it as a derelict aircraft, essentially a nuisance under the Carson City Code. And the recommended action is to authorize the airport manager to dispose of it. I know that he has some additional information in his briefing. He talks about the difficulty on getting title. I don't think our intention is to get title from the FAA to dispose of it. We're disposing it as scrap. Any bill of sale that we would give to a scrap provider would say we are only disposing it as scrap. We're not intending that this be utilized as an aircraft, and that's not our representation. And so if the aluminum dealer says he won't take it unless he has an FAA title, then it becomes a little bit more complicated because then we have to go through a lien sale process. We first have to have a bill for services, go through a lien sale process. That's probably a $1,500 process. My inclination is that we would not be approaching this from the standpoint of transferring title to an aircraft. What we're doing is we're disposing of abandoned aluminum, basically. And so that's what my recommendation is, but I know that Mr. Rowe has some updated information. He's talked to Ms. Weaver.
Uh-huh. Mr. Rowe.
Yvette Weaver called me this afternoon. It's very too late to really get it into the briefing. But her words to me was that she is willing to work with the authority. It's unclear exactly what she plans to do, but I told her that it needed to be moved from its spot off of Taxiway Bravo. I suggested to her that she contact Shade Tree Aviation, Jim Wickersham, because he has a spot next to his hangar where the aircraft can be moved. What's done with it, I don't know, but it's still a derelict because it is not registered. It's not airworthy, and personal property taxes on that aircraft have not been paid since 2001. So I really don't know where to go with this, but I explained to her that it's going to be up to the members tonight to decide exactly what to do with the aircraft. So what council said about the scrapping the aircraft, the research that I've done says that we have to have ownership of that aircraft to be able to scrap it because of the FAA registration branch in Oklahoma City. We've got to research this a little bit further because I'm not exactly sure the process that we're going to have to go through to take possession of the aircraft so that we can scrap it. And having said that, an empty weight of an albatross is approximately 22,884 pounds. This one has been stripped. The price of aluminum scrap metal is about 14 cents a square foot as of last week, which will net us somewhere in the vicinity of $3,000. But there's a cost to removing the aircraft scrap, and it's probably going to be in excess of $3,000. So either way, we're not going to make any money off of this aircraft. It's junk.
You know, first of all, this isn't about making money. If we end up recovering more than our costs of disposing it, we're obligated to give that to Ms. Weaver. But I don't know what the cost of removing it. I don't know what you're referring to, because my thought was you contact the scrap dealer, you invite him in to cut it up or take it apart, however he wants to put it on a truck so that he can reutilize it. I don't know how the aluminum scrap dealers deal with this, but I do know from a prior lien sale back when we were doing that one from that guy in Minnesota, the albatross that was out there, the only people who were interested in it at the time were scrap dealers. And so apparently there is value in that aluminum to them. And I think the way you should approach it is probably if the airport authority approves you disposing of it, is you call the scrap dealer and say, okay, come on over. What are you going to pay me to take it apart here and get it out of here? You know, basically we're selling it to you where it sits. And the bill of sale that we would give would only be the possessory bill of sale that we have, not an FAA ownership certificate. Because right now, to get an FAA ownership certificate would be very difficult. It's been deregistered by the FAA. You search that serial number or that N number, and it comes up not assigned. It's been taken out of the FAA records. And so I'm guessing it would be very difficult to get it back even into that process, so I don't think we want to march down that path.
Yeah, I can easily get a quote. There's a person in Sparks that can probably scrap it. I have not been in contact with him, but I was given his phone number, and I can easily get in contact and, you know, find out what kind of estimate I can get.
The decision for you guys is really, do you direct him to dispose of it, or do you respond somehow to this last overture by Ms. Weaver? And just a tiny bit of background, this is not legal advice, but it may help draw the picture. Yvette and Jerry Weaver, and frankly, I've been looking lately at some of the records, maybe her name's really Yvonne, I don't really know. I thought she introduced herself to us as Yvette, but that was at a time when we had an Yvonne Weaver who was an airport manager, so maybe there was reason to distinguish them. But she and Jerry Weaver were married and started a business called Weaver Brothers, and they manufactured some kind of auto parts. I'm not sure what, some race car parts or something. Jerry Weaver was one of the first, was on the first board of the Airport Authority, and I think he was actually our first chairman of the board. A very nice guy, very committed, died of a heart attack. And since then, she has kind of hung on to that airplane, and I think it's become an emotional issue for her, hanging on to a piece of the past, because both of them would talk at the time, you know, this was 1989, 1990, they would talk about how they were going to get that plane all fixed up and go camping on it. And they'd go land on lakes and go camping. And so this was a dream they had. And so I think one of the things we're bumping into with Ms. Weaver is an emotional attachment to this airplane that's difficult for her to come to grips with. And again, that's not a legal consideration, but I just thought I would throw it out there because it's helpful, I think, sometimes to know what the backstory is.
Okay, Member White, Member Williams. Okay, that's two drinks. Member Williams.
As to the disposal of the aircraft, I know that there used to be an old Aleutian up at Stead that was out in the middle of the field, big, giant chunk of aluminum, just like this thing is. And Stead Airport and the owner of that did scrap it, and the scrappers came out and cut it up and took it away and paid for the privilege of doing so. So the issue of that is that we don't have to do anything. Call them. They're going to give us a price based on them cutting it up and hauling it away, I know. And after the meeting, I can put you in touch with the right people if you want to. The second thing I think Steve has commented, and to Tim's comment that Yvette or Yvonne, whichever she is, contacted us today, I think it's reasonable and compassionate on the part of the Airport Authority to say, perhaps you didn't understand, but this has to go away. Now, if you want to come over and cut the wings off and tow it off the airport and put it someplace, that's fine as long as you do it by next week. But otherwise, it's going. And I think we have to be pretty clear, understand that she doesn't want to lose it. But if she wants to keep it, she can't keep it here. That's really the issue. We can't keep this thing on our airport. So I think there's no problem with getting rid of it if we choose to do so, and I think we certainly can be compassionate in the process of doing so, and so authorize the airport manager if, you know, that's the board's wish.
Thank you, Member Williams. Member Peterson?
A couple of questions. Mr. Rowe, is she current on the rent?
She pays a $90 per month parking rate or transient tie down, and she's about a month behind.
Okay. Next question. Mr. Tegas, it arrived as an airplane. We are now accepting rent for aircraft parking. And an aircraft, in my mind, and I don't want to tread into your territory, is real property. And titles can be lost or terminated, but it continues. There are certain things, like cars, that exist as real property. They can be scrapped, but you can't take them unless there's a process. I mean, we have mechanics liens. Somebody abandons a car. It doesn't stop being a car. It doesn't stop being an entity in the mind of the government. And the mechanic can take ownership through the lien process, and they can do with what he wants, and it goes away. I get how we view that pile of metal out there, but it seems to me that even we have been acknowledging it is still an aircraft by taking that rental for an aircraft tie-down. And I worry that if we take unilateral action, even with compassionate efforts, say, I'm sorry, it's out of here, next Wednesday it's gone, we may be handing her a heck of an opportunity to bring action against us. And your opinion will be helpful on that. But before I hear that, when I hear these things, has anybody sat down face-to-face with her ever in a long time? Okay.
I have not. Okay. The last time I had a dealing with this, she was represented by counsel, and I talked to him.
Okay.
But that was a long time ago, and then she notified
us. I would like to suggest, sometimes business gets done over a cup of tea. I'm willing to volunteer to go with whoever, and if she's represented by counsel and he wants to be there, then you would probably need to be the guy that goes. I'm happy to go see her by myself. I'm happy to go with Mr. Rowe. Not a big retinue, you know, whatever she wants, to sit down and say, here's what we're working on. I got a problem, as you said. We just want to solve the problem. And how can we get there? And sometimes you find out, oh, so that's what you meant, and we get a signature that says, it's the airports, we're done here. I am wondering, let me ask this question, is do you have an opinion on whether through some recommendation of the authority, the city would forgive unpaid personal property tax? Because if I go in and make a deal with somebody, I got to be bringing something.
I don't know the answer to that. That's something I can try and find out and get back to you on. I don't know if they have in the past forgave personal property tax. Maybe Supervisor Shirk, do you have any knowledge on that? The city of no.
Well, my point is here, we want to get it done. I think this was going on X years ago when I was here. You know, okay, we want to get this done. I'm happy to go in and do business, as we call it in Texas, but I need to be able to do some business. And it would help to bring something. That's all I'm saying. Even without that, I'm happy to go in and say, Miss Weaver, it's got to happen. How can you and I work this out? And look at my pictures of my grandkids, you know, whatever it takes to get there. I don't know if that'll work, but I'm happy to go into the breach on that. Does she live locally?
Yes, I believe she does.
Okay.
And she accepted service of the mail. She signed the return receipt. Okay. Right there on their, Boeing Avenue Drive. It's right in the industrial airpark area where her business is.
Well, I realize I've asked several questions, but based upon my hunch, and you're the legal authority, that regardless of the deregistration by the FAA, that it is real property, and that if we try to just take it, we're stepping into the ant pile. That's kind of my current hunch. You might disagree.
Yeah, let me respond to that.
Okay.
Yes, it is personal property in that sense. It is realistic. It's Real property usually refers to real estate. I know that's not what you meant. What you meant is people have property rights to items, and this one has some property rights attached to it. And yes, it does. I look at it more along the lines of this is like a car that somebody comes and dumps on your property, and it's missing the wheels and it's missing everything else, and it no longer has any registration anyplace. And what do you do with it?
Which is why I said we've been cashing the rent check. It hasn't been dumped here. We have acknowledged it is an airplane duly parked here by cashing her rent check. And it's a month late, but that's not enough to take this kind of action.
Right. The difficulty is it's kind of morphed into something other than an airplane. What it is now is a pigeon habitat and probably a health hazard. And so at some point, the property stops kind of being what it is. It starts to have more value as something else. But I will grant you, yes, there is always risk to us of being sued. If we dispose of it and she makes a claim, there is the risk that a court could say, hey, wait a second, you didn't have the right to dispose of that. And, of course, our response is, well, what are we supposed to do with it? You know, it's like it's essentially been abandoned here. The payment of rent, yeah, that's a different issue. I mean, that puts a different slant on it. So I don't know the answer, really.
I'm not arguing with her motives. So to kind of sum this up, because I'm uncomfortable voting to say, go get rid of it tomorrow, call the scrap company and get it out of here. I'm happy to go meet her. Can anybody tell me what's the best way to make an inquiry with the city on would they forgive the unpaid property tax in order to expedite removing hazardous waste scrap from the airport? If the answer is no, I'll go anyway. But how do we find out the answer to that question?
My approach would be to talk to Dave Dolly, who is the county assessor, city assessor, of course, city assessor. And if he may end up saying you need to talk to the city treasurer, and then you can talk to her. But I think I would start with Dave, because I think he's the person who does the assessment of taxes. He will know the answer to that.
If I could, I went through this a little while ago, about 6-7 years ago, because I had a couple of aircraft that were in the process of restoration. It's the city's opinion if it's not flyable, it's not registered, and it's in any way disassembled, it's not taxable. They don't tax aircraft as aircraft, so I doubt seriously that there are any unpaid property taxes on it since it's been they probably haven't paid any taxes because there aren't any taxes. That's the way it was, because I called and inquired about taxes on these two aircraft that I was restoring, and they said you don't owe any taxes on them until they're aircraft again and flyable.
Well, again, I'm working on the comments of our manager who said there are unpaid taxes, so we need real information here.
What I actually said was that taxes have not been paid on it since 2001. I talked to Karen Machado, and that's what she told me. Whether there's taxes owed on it, I really don't know. But I'll be happy to talk to her in the morning and find out just what
is owed on the
airplane.
I don't mind going or not even having an answer on this, because, again, we're here just to get this thing done. And I don't mind making a motion that we suspend this action for a month and give me the opportunity to go meet with her, during which time you will find out about the taxes and we'll make inquiries with the tax assessor on the possibilities if there are any residual taxes.
I'd be happy. I think it's a great idea, yeah.
Member Stutz.
Yeah, just a suggestion for the removal of the aircraft if Don's efforts are not successful. First of all, the National Guard in the past has gone out along the Carson River and pulled cars out of the river areas. They do it as an exercise and using some of their salvage equipment. We might be able to get them to do that, and we also might interest the fire department in having that airplane towed over to that area where they like to burn things up for practice. That would benefit the airport. It would benefit the fire department. It would benefit the National Guard, who got the practice pulling that thing out. And it might even mollify Yvette to know that her airplane that she is emotionally attached to is now basically installed as some sort of a monument to her late husband, although incinerated, maybe.
Better yet, a donation. A donation, yes, with a tax. Yeah, right. There you go.
Well, all, well, good ideas, all member Stutz, in terms of you know, I don't know if there's interest in, you know, from those folks. I mean, is that a volunteering to go find out?
Yeah, I'll go find out. I'll talk to the National Guard and the fire department to see if they would like that airplane.
Okay, I think that's a good. Thank you for that. A good thing to do. You know, to the question about what we are implying by continuing to collect rent, I think that's a very, very important piece here. I'm surprised to learn if we are continuing to collect rent, because effectively the objective of the original, you know, when we discussed this last time and had the letter sent, it was effectively an eviction notice. Okay, your aircraft, you know, or whatever you want to call it, is no longer welcome here. This tie down, this piece of earth, is not available for rent by you for this anymore. Okay, so are we continuing to bill her and to collect rent, or did we terminate billing for tie down rent effective X date?
I have never billed her. It's been an automatic payment every month through a payment company that sends checks, and no, I've never turned it away, but, of course, I'll do as instructed.
Well, okay, have we received a rent payment since the to cover a period of storage beyond August 30th, 2015?
No.
Okay, I would like to ask that should you receive a payment, you know, just simply by kind of perpetual motion of an automatic payment system, that those monies be remitted back to Yvette immediately, okay, so that we're making a very clear statement that we are no longer accepting payment for this tie-down because it no longer exists, okay? This was your eviction notice, and I think that's a very important piece. Now, knowing that we haven't done that yet, I think brings me great comfort, because it means we're not in the position that you suggest where we, you know, and that's a great question you asked, that we maybe were kind of saying one thing by accepting the dollars. For me, this goes a long way to, you know, what I'd be interested in authorizing here tonight, you know, and to me it's these other options, business, not, you know, not donation, notwithstanding, you know, I'd like to come out of here tonight, you know, from my standpoint, with the authorization to take whatever actions are necessary, and, you know, from what I've heard from counsel about where, you know, our rights and where we could run afoul, obviously everything runs a risk of, you know, somebody saying, hey, you can't do that to my stuff. But, you know, my thought on this is that we, you know, could come out of here with an authorization to do that, and then we will suspend our action on that to not happen, you know, until such a time and, you know, limited by no more than, say, 2 weeks, where we've had a chance to run out, you know, all of these options that are being suggested. You know, my thoughts on this is that we should, you know, I would support a motion to make that authorization. Member White. I mean, not Member Williams? Member White.
It seems to me that we, at least in my mind, have kind of talked around the serious issue that we have, and that's a health issue with the amount of pigeon waste that apparently is there. I would suggest that we need to instigate through the health department the cleaning of that waste, because that's going to have to be addressed even if the scrap company comes in and cuts that thing up and hauls it away. We can't have that left behind. I think it would be proper for Mr. Rowe to visit with the health department and see what we can get going to get that taken care of.
So, yeah, I'm not sure, you know, that's the right thing to do, is to find out what the health department thinks about this and have them come out. I mean, they may go, yeah, you know, it's pigeon crap, you know, what do you want us to do? Or they might say, yeah, you know, to the Carson City Municipal Code citation that we have here, which is, yeah, this is something you guys need to have cleaned up. This is no good. To which it rises to the level of damaging airport property, and so the mitigation and cleanup of that would be an additional thing that would be billed to, and costs that would be liable to Ms. Weaver to mitigate that condition. So I think that that's an important piece of this overall cleanup, is to get an opinion. And I don't know. I have no experience in this. I don't know what their take on it might be. But maybe they have an opinion, and we should find out.
I'm involved in a situation as we speak dealing with pigeon waste, and the health department has a very dim view on pigeon waste. And it sounds like what we're dealing with is substantially less than this airplane is providing.
The voice of an expert is always welcome.
Not an expert, just dealing with it.
So that sounds like another inquiry that should be run. And Manager Rowe, would you be able to contact Carson City Health Department and have visit the site with them to get guidance on what might happen there?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I wonder if there's a market for guano.
Can't you make explosives or gunpowder or something out of that? Blow the airplane up using its own deposits. Okay, so I can't remember. Am I allowed to make a motion? Am I that kind of chairman, or am I the kind that can't?
Yeah, under the rules that we are operating under, the chairman can make a motion.
Okay. Encourage you. Do we have any public comment on this matter? Okay, hearing none, we'll come back. Yeah, and any guano experts. Then I would like to make a motion that we authorize the airport manager to dispose of the Yvette Weaver Albatross and bill any net cost to the airport for its disposal or remediation of the site, reference the guano, to the owner, Yvette Weaver, conditioned, though, that we will not act on that that the airport manager will not act on that authorization until we have taken the steps outlined by Member Peterson, Member Stotts, to look at some of the alternatives that may be available for its disposal.
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second from Member Williams. Further discussion on this matter? Hearing none, we're in need of a vote. All in favor of the motion? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, if there be any? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. And, yes, sir.
Steve, can you or someone provide the contact information for Ms. Weaver?
Yeah, I'll get it to you. And I would suggest that you go with somebody. That's just good practice to have at least two people.
Is it appropriate for you to go if they don't have an attorney?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, for me to go. Then you're it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Members Peterson and Members Stotts, for conducting this research and for, there's such a bad joke here, for Manager Rowe for taking the crappy job. Appreciate it. This takes us to item number six. Discussion, no, it takes us to item number five. Six. Discussion and possible action to approve the 2016 airport open house event and the date to be held. And discussion and possible action to appoint an authority member to oversee the open house and provide reports to the authority. Mr. Rowe.
Okay, I've written a briefing, but I'll just kind of shorten it here. Basically, the annual open house has been going on for a very long time here. We open up the gates, open it up for the public. Over the years, we've broadened the scope of the open house with adding activities and that are designed to basically interest the youth and adults of the opportunities available in aviation. We have robotics. We've got this last year we had some drone zone from Reno UNR, and a lot of activities that have just really taken a life of their own on with the open house. We've had more retail vendors and nonprofit organizations than ever before. Military recruiters are always invited and usually on hand, as well as the Air Guard's UH-60, which is usually a standard. You'll see attached in the paperwork a list of the vendors and exhibitors that we had at the last open house in June, and we've been very fortunate. We've had between 4,000 and 5,000 people, and those are conservative numbers. And I'm proposing that next year's open house be held on a Saturday in June 11th or the 18th. Since we're not competing with the high school graduation next year, the 11th might work just fine. The 18th has always, or the third Saturday has always worked well for us. We're usually backed up against the Taste of Downtown, but has never been a problem with us having a successful open house. So I'm asking that the authority approve the open house, one of those dates. And I'm also asking for the first time if the authority would appoint a member to basically oversee the open house, to bring back reports to the authority to give me guidance and to guide the open house committee, which we have a bunch of great people working to see that the open house is a success. Some problems arose at the last open house, and I want to make sure that those problems don't arise again. So I'm asking that a member of the authority be a part of that open house committee to guide the process to try to continue this program. It's a great program. And if there's any questions.
Thank you, Member Rowe. Questions and comments from authority members? Member Stott.
So can you be more explicit about what the authority member would be doing? You mentioned that he would be guiding the open house committee, or just simply indicating whether an action was sane or crazy?
Absolutely. Over the years, I have pretty much chaired the open house committees. Basically because I was unable to draft anyone else. A couple of years ago, I was able to draft Ray Posh, who did an outstanding job, but he realized that he didn't want to do it anymore. So it was left to my responsibility again, and it's a lot of work. It takes me away from my job as airport manager to cover that much responsibility. So I'm asking that somebody else step in, and I think it couldn't be would be a better fit for an airport authority member to head that up, and I will provide all the logistical support.
A comment comes to mind on that. When I've organized things within companies before, one of the critical elements to success or not is what I'll call vested interest, and the person running something needs to have skin in the game, or it gets a uncommitted degree of effort. This is the first time I've really thought through this subject. My first response is the person who would have the greatest vested interest in the success of the open house in all regards, financial, public interaction, safety, adherence to FARs and the needs of the FAA, would be you. The rest of us are certainly interested and enthusiastic for it, but it's not our behinds in the crack if we get some of those critical elements wrong. And I appreciate that you have other duties. This may be one of your big duties.
Well, that's kind of. I thought you were going to say Carl would be there. You know, it's something.
I didn't know which way you were going to go.
You know, it's actually a challenge for me. It's something I enjoy. It is a very stressful time for me. But I'd like to ask, I'm asking basically for involvement. You don't have to actually chair the open house committee, but have a member of the authority on the committee to represent the authority is a biggie. I was really pleased that most of the authority members came to the open house. I appreciate you bringing your aircraft over. That was very nice. And so a vested interest, yes, I have a vested interest in seeing that the open house is a resounding success. That's my only focus, to make sure it goes off without a hitch. There were a few hitches, there always are, but we want to make it better next year, and we learn from our mistakes. But I would like to have a little bit of involvement from the Airport Authority, and I will be happy to chair it.
So the concept is really for an authority liaison to the open house committee, which certainly is a good thing. I mean, I think that was a good idea, and that person, of course, is not there as the voice of the Airport Authority. But it is somebody who is Airport Authority minded, who I think would be good counsel to the group. In principle, there's nothing offensive or objectionable about the idea. I think it's a good one. The question is, who would like to serve in that role would really be the order of business. And I don't know if really the authority would be appointing a member. What the real action would be there, or if it's just simply kind of a call. I mean, I guess if it was going to be officially on behalf of the Airport Authority, that we would need to make an appointment, I guess.
Taking recent precedent as our guide, we might just decide that the new member replacing Member Williams will come in with that as part of his duties, yeah, whether he's attending that vote or not.
Or in common practice to these sort of groups, you just appoint the guy that's not here tonight.
I think Member Posick may just be our man.
Just to make a comment about Member Posick, he is part of the committee already. He is very active with the open house. He's our ramp manager. He organizes the apron. And, when if he became treasurer, he wasn't here that day either.
Well, didn't you just answer you've got a member now that's on your committee? I'm thinking we move on.
I just need approval for the authority or the open house and a tentative date.
Okay. Any public comment on this matter? Yes, sir.
Bill Hartman. I'll sign in here. I'm a member of the Airport Open House Committee also. And one of the things I'm hearing here is Tim needs some of the time burden relieved from him, that he's been burdened with his committee chair. And what has happened so far this evening, I don't see has relieved any of the time burden on him. If Steve is the representative, his plate's really full with the stuff he's doing already. And I don't know if this proposal makes any sense or not, but is it possible, Tim, that you could hire somebody that would take over some of your duties? And the implication, go ahead, I'm sorry.
We don't have the budget, Bill. I appreciate that.
Okay, and that's the next thing I was going to mention is the budget issue. From, 2 years ago we didn't have an open house. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And from 3 years ago to the one this year, the amount of money you allocated for Tim to run the open house just went in the toilet. And I was there as a committee member, or as an open house committee member, to see the impact it had on Tim, the increased workload it put on him. And my request to you guys is stop being such cheap Charlies relative to the airport open house and fund him the money he needs to run it properly. And if that requires hiring somebody as a part-time help to doing some of these tasks, I think that's one of the things that needs to be considered. So my recommendation would be is for Tim to submit a proposal to the airport authority saying, you know, this is because the budget issue has to be addressed at some point. And I think it's a good time to do it right now as a part of this proposal. So that Tim takes and submits to the authority a budget request, including the help he needs to get the job done properly. And that obviously can't be done tonight. So this would be putting off this agenda item for another month. And then, you know, approaching the problem that way. I'm not the treasurer. I don't know the dollars coming and going. But the airport open house, you guys have been there. It's very successful. Great opportunity for the people from the community to come. Kids get exposure to great stuff. Yeah, we didn't have a climbing wall this year, and we did 3 years ago, but hopefully it comes back. You know, it works real well. If you've come and had your car helped into a parking spot, that's my job. I'm there with my Boy Scouts. We do the parking every year. There's a whole bunch of people doing a whole bunch of different things to make this thing successful. And to see you guys pull back on the money, I just think that's wrong. I think this needs the financial support to make it work. So that's what I have to say. Any questions or comments for me?
Well, thank you, Mr. Hartman, and I want to say thank you for the volunteer work that you do in support of the open house, which is a very important initiative of Carson Airport. And it's one that survives very much on the backs of the volunteers and the airport community pulling together to make this thing happen. Because the reality is that first and foremost, when budget decisions have to be made, our responsibility as this authority is to ensure that Carson City has a safe and capable airport that's well-maintained, serviced, and you know, serves the needs of the aviation community for a long time to come. We're stewards of that. And when dollars have to be allocated, that's where they go. Okay. And it's not that anybody here doesn't love it when we can have the best event that promotes our airport, the open house that we can, and I don't think you're meaning to characterize it, you know, the intent that way. The budget decisions are made through a process that has been done for this year. Any additions to budget would have to be offset by increased revenues. We're running in a very tight budget environment. When we look ahead to the airport improvement projects, the maintenance of your runways and taxiways, the construction of the north ramp, we're working very hard to try to see that we're find a way clear in an area of reduced tax revenues and so forth to actually make our matches so that we can keep the airport infrastructure, the most important part of our job, going. So there aren't dollars flying around, and it's not because we're, you know, being cheap. It's because they're priorities. This is a very important piece of Tim's job. Okay, it is part of the promotion of the airport. It is part of, you know, continuing to be a good community citizen and build awareness of what we do in the community, and hopefully attract folks to the airport to see what a nice place it is to buy some gas, maybe base their G650. You know, these are good and important activities, and it is very much part of Tim's job description to put on a first-class event, and we try to give as many resources as possible to make that happen. Having said that, it is a lot of work. We can't hire somebody to be an assistant to this. We can't increase the budget for the open house, certainly not this year. And, you know, therefore, it's really going to be important that we be able to rely on great volunteers like yourself, and that's why I open by saying thank you so much for what you do and for what Mr. Posick does on behalf of, well, not on behalf of the authority, but as Mr. Posick for the open house. So that, I hope, is helpful. You know, everyone here wants to support the event, but we do have, as an authority, responsibilities to prioritize when it comes to the dollars.
Thank you for your comments. I just see what's happened here tonight has done absolutely nothing to achieve what Tim is trying to achieve. That's all.
Oh, we're not done yet.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Peterson.
I actually got a couple of comments. You've added one. I just want to remark for you and for whoever else might be following this. We are essentially a not-for-profit operation. It would be lovely if we ran a surplus, but as the chairman says, we're struggling to make critical payments. Not so very long ago, our airport was run by a part-time manager, and the open house happened under her guidance. And as we face this growing airport and a ballooning budget, we're looking for out-of-the-box thinking on how to get it all done. And as a not-for-profit, community-centered airport, we're not an airline field. This is for our community. We depend upon volunteers to make a lot happen. If we were to respond to your request and give the open house a bigger budget, by law, we can't run a deficit. We're not the federal government. We'd have to get more revenues, which would be donations or volunteer help, or we would have to cut another expense, an expense item. Our single big expense, as I understand it, are salaries. And I don't think that's what you're asking for, but I am referencing a time when a part-time manager actually got the job done for about a third of the total expense that our salaries are these days. And again, I don't think that's where you're wanting us to go, and I don't know that we have any initiative to go in that way either. But what I said to Manager Rowe a minute ago, I really see the airport open house as being at the heart of one of his job responsibilities because he has the most to lose if it fails. Therefore, he'll do a great job and it won't fail. And I've seen it succeed. I see that when big projects like that get delegated to a disinterested party, they do tend to fail. So I just want to point out for you, our interests are the same as yours, but we are governed by law. We cannot deficit spend. We either have to get extra donations, which would actually fall to Mr. Rowe to go solicit from businesses who might want to donate to the open house through advertising or what have you, or we would have to find expenses to cut on the airport. We don't have the money. It's just simply, it's not a discretionary expenditure on our part. And just before you go, just to finish my comments, you had a comment or a note in here about the date. I've always thought that actually being on the same day as the Taste of Carson was a good thing, not a distraction. You get families are like, okay, this is the Saturday. We're going to leave the house and go cruising around Carson and look at airplanes, and then when we get done with that, we're going to go down here. I don't. That's just an opinion. I have no idea if it's true or not. But I do wonder. It's work. We haven't had a failure of attendance when we're on the same day as the Taste of Carson. I would suspect monkey with that at our peril.
I agree. That was the suggestion that was made. Actually, my wife and I, after the open house, we go home, clean up, and we go downtown. So it's kind of a tradition for us, and I personally like the date. It was suggested because of the high school getting out earlier in May this time that we wouldn't be competing for with the graduation kids. But I do agree that the 18th does look like a valid
date. I've seen synergy of advertising, you know, downtown Taste of Carson, airport open house. You know, do more of what works and avoid breaking it. I would stick with it.
We fight over the banner downtown, but I get in earlier than the Taste of Downtown, so our banner is usually up the week before the open house.
Yes, sir.
Since Member Peterson brought up the issue of the part-time manager, back then I was making a landing here at night, and the runway lights kept flickering off and on, randomly, different ones at different times. And I thought, you know, what's going on here? So the next day I came out and kind of looked, and sagebrush had grown up around the runway lights. And that's what was causing them to blink on and off. The lights weren't blinking. It was they were getting obscured by the weeds, the bush that had grown up. So I went to Avon and mentioned this to her and that they needed to be cut down. So her response, she told me, if I want them cut down, go ahead and do it myself. We don't have that problem now that we have full-time people taking care of the airport for us. I don't have to go out there and cut the sage around. No, I didn't do it, actually. But I just thought that was an unbelievable response, that that was her responsibility to take care of those sorts of things. We don't have that issue now because we have people.
For me, this really wasn't a discussion about the management structure. It was to try to put into context how our budget works.
I understand.
And back then, we spent a lot less on salaries. I'm not focusing on the manager itself. We had more people in total now. And we had more slack in the budget for other things. So to discuss the performance we got then from Yvonne is not an agenda item here. No, it's not really on the table.
This is not a performance issue. It's the money being spent, and I think we're getting our money's worth for spending more money.
I'm glad that the conditions as a pilot at the airport have improved as we've moved along instead of degraded, and it's always good to hear that. Thank you very much for those comments. Okay, so this brings us back to the need for some action here, if warranted. There are two parts to this. One is approval of a date for the open house. There's been a little discussion of that. And then potentially, an appointment of a member of the, a representative, a liaison from the airport authority to the open house committee. I suppose it's authorizing there to be such a thing if someone wants to volunteer as a actual representative of the airport authority. Those would be the two questions.
I move that we approve June 18th, which I believe was the taste day, as the date for the open house for 2016.
Second. We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Member Peterson. Any further discussion from the authority? Seeing none, we need a vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries unanimously. And is there any desire for formal action on behalf of the authority to appoint or authorize a representative on behalf of the authority to the open house? It could have merit, but it's every meeting that we attend has Mr. Rowe at it anyway. So I'm not sure what the additional value and from a reporting standpoint. I don't think we need to. They're certainly not there as a hall monitor. So I'm not sure, aside from us, being willing to volunteer and encouraging each other to do as much as we can to support the open house, if there's really a need for a formal authority representative. And Mr. Rowe, is there anything beyond sort of extra hands and hearts and excitement that you're actually looking for from having an authority representative?
I think that a member of the authority could also keep me in check as far as programming the programs that we do at the open house. I don't want to that's probably not the right term. I don't want to get into territories that I should not do as far as some of the events that we do at the open house. I got in a little trouble this last year because of some things that happened there, and I basically wanting to promote the open house and other things, so I don't want to get carried away. I like to have somebody tap me on the shoulder and say, slow down, let's not go there.
I'll tell you what, Tim, we'll make this as easy as possible, and that is I will work closely with you as we get the details start to emerge around ideas for the open house, and I will support you, and we can work on evaluating those things together. How about that?
That sounds like a great idea. Thank you.
All right, Tim. Then we'll do it that way. In that case, we're prepared for item number 7, discussion possible action to form a strategy group to be organized by, apologies for the typo, it's Maurice White and Don Peterson, to consider alternative methods to speed commercial development of the Carson City Airport
and present findings to the airport authority for further consideration. Who's on first? Member White.
Indeed, Member Peterson and I did meet following last month's meeting, as we were directed to kind of talk through some of the admittedly random thoughts that I had brought to the authority. And what we came up with, at least to my memory, working through my mental dysfunction that day following a pretty serious oral surgery that morning, we came to the conclusion that working with counsel on a pro bono basis, that we could approach different members of the community, as well as people on the airport that have some marketing experience and some ideas about what it would take to jumpstart development on the airport. And we would do this on an informal basis. And if Member Peterson has anything else to add to that, I would welcome his comments.
Member White's pretty well tallied up, but just to add to it, I had only just rejoined the authority and heard Mr. White's conversation about the need of the airport, and I agree with that. But what I said to him at lunch is that an organization like this works best when they're given specific goals and specific solutions to meet them, and they can say, yes, we'll support it, or no, we won't. But to launch out and say, we need to do it for the children, doesn't get a whole lot of focused action. And I have an opinion that the larger the committee, the less is done. So I've volunteered with him. We'll go away. And what we discussed was to approach it with what we all thought was common wisdom to this point may not hold true, such as, can there be commercial businesses inside the triangle? The answer before, there's no way to deliver, and here's the five reasons why you can't. Well, who knows? That may be revisited. We could also look at property developers, the NDAA, and others to say, what can we do to package, and I'll call it market, but to package our airport and market it to targeted people, industries, companies that might want to invest either in through-the-fence operations or inside-the-fence operations, and to do an effective selling job. What we do now is essentially nothing. If somebody finds us and finds somebody to talk to, we'll say, well, I don't know, and go make an offer, and here's the bid process, and it's all very cumbersome. And I've been part of organizations, not so much at airports, but at similar entities where we said, hey, if we want to sell something, we got to look good against the competition. So that's all we're proposing. He and I will sit down and form some thoughts and then attract members of the community, whoever that may be. That, like I said, it may be businesses, it may be individuals with certain expertises, and then try to form a statement of what we would like to recommend the authority invest its time. Who knows if there's a budget involved, that doesn't really matter, it's probably time, to see if we can't speed up attracting businesses to increase the activity at the airport. If nothing comes from it, it'll get quiet. But if we have something to propose, we will.
Well, thank you for that presentation. Any questions at this time from our authority members? I would just say that I appreciate the volunteering around really carrying forward something. And Member Williams, you weren't at the last meeting, but when this came up, I reminded everyone that this was something that you had championed from about the time that I came onto the authority. Looking at Center Triangle, looking at business development, and I was really encouraged to have that continued, to have someone stepping forward and saying, let's keep this discussion top of stack. And Member White, you've been actually picking up that torch for a while. And I think this is a great idea, and a small group is a good one, not just because of open meeting, but as you said, it's a more agile, more capable thing. And the proposal to first, go out, do some thinking, do a little learning, and sort of report in with what that feels like as a scope, and what some objectives and some milestones might look like, I think is a great first step, because that means we don't have to thrash all that out
sitting here. We can actually rely on you guys to noodle it over and provide a little bit of pointing. And I appreciate Council Takis also volunteering to support that effort as necessary. So those are my thoughts on it. I think it's a great thing to have a group of interested individuals drawing upon knowledgeable individuals, not to suggest these two are mutually exclusive, to always be looking at the future economic vitality of the airport. So that's certainly something that I support. Member White.
I might also add that we are very aware of the open meeting law, and we will diligently make sure that we don't violate that. And so that will probably mean we won't share a lot outside this room. I mean, we just can't. So we're not keeping secrets. We're just making sure we don't violate the open meeting law.
Well, I mean, the real key there on the open meeting law, when we've got like a committee that's out collecting information, is that you need to bring that information back to the body as a whole for consideration. It's not, there isn't a delegation of authority to you to go make decisions, development decisions, without the rest of the airport authority. That's where we get tripped up with the open meeting law. But the fact that it's less than a quorum and you're going to bring the findings and the information back to the authority, that allows you to proceed without having to notice each of your meetings to actually probably get a lot more done.
And I think what Member White is sort of emphasizing is that if it looks like there's radio silence in the interim between meetings, you know, and we're not reporting out to you all on email, the reason is trying to not run afoul of starting a discussion outside of the open meeting, so that we should not take that as a cabal is working in secrecy, but rather hang tight till the next meeting where we will be reporting out on the interim activities. Is that right?
Okay.
Well, I would then make a motion to form a strategy committee to be led by Morris White and Don Peterson and supported by Council Takis on a pro bono basis to look at alternative methods, investigate opportunities for economic development on the airport and present those findings to the authority.
I'll second that.
Okay, seconded by Member Williams. Further discussion? Hearing none, and recognizing I should note that the public was not in the room at the time of discussion of this matter. We'd be in need of a vote. All in favor of the motion? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, if there be any? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. And again, thank you guys for taking the lead on moving this forward. I look forward to hearing what you have, what you come back with.
And thank you for your vote of confidence.
You bet. Item, let's see. So this concludes our public hearings for tonight. We now move to non-action items, starting with item number G, the airport engineer's report. Mr. Clegg.
Yeah, I emailed and passed out the engineer's report. I don't have anything to add.
We continue to design away on the north apron.
Correct.
And
it's just preliminary stages right now, but we're moving forward.
Okay. No oil or gold been struck by those little drilling operations yet?
Unfortunately, no.
We can always hope. Thank you, Mr. Clegg. Item number H, the airport manager's report. Mr. Rowe.
A couple of quick things. The wildlife assessment has been initiated. And just to give a rundown, the FAA requires all airports, Part 139, to conduct a wildlife hazard assessment when an aircraft experiences either wildlife strikes or engine ingestion of wildlife. Carson City is not a 139 airport, but it, along with many GA airports in Nevada, will be studied through a block grant from the FAA. NDOT has contracted with CNS companies to provide wildlife hazard assessments and to help identify and minimize risk. The wildlife hazard assessment must include recommended actions to reduce wildlife hazards
and addressed wildlife population management. In some cases, the FAA may determine that wildlife hazard management plan is needed based on the findings. We're going on September 2nd, I met with representatives of CNS, EnviroSystem, and NDOT's planning division to begin the process of the wildlife hazard assessment. The kickoff agenda is handed out to each member, and that was discussed, and an airport tour was given to the representative to give them basically guidelines on where they could go on the airport, not cross runways, give way to aircraft, that sort of thing, and basically a crash course on driving on the airport. The process will probably be completed mid-next year. Some of the things we discussed, very open, they're looking at birds, they're looking at the geese problem, which we don't have one at the airport, and I don't know how we escaped that. Yeah, we have a couple of albatrosses running loose. We have had trouble with coyotes in the past. They've not been a problem for about a year and a half, 2 years. We're starting to see a few more. But so far, there's been no major complaints. We did see a deer, which I did brief the people doing the survey on. But we haven't seen that deer in a couple of months, so it might have been just a odd lost deer that was kind of confused and didn't know where he was going. Yeah, they call it roadkill in some places. But like I said, they're going to be doing some small animal trapping in April. That's going to cover basically rodents, voles, things like that, nothing any larger. And that's just to kind of get an idea of the type of mammals we have on the airport so they can continue with their assessment. This morning, Gary Province notified me that a hangar on the airport was going to doing some construction inside its hangar. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it because it will probably show up on an agenda item next month. But the tenant was notified, asked to stop. The tenant also talked to Steve Takis, who notified him of the process, and that the tenant is going to get some information from the planning department and the building department to see if a permit is required for what he wants to do, and if it is, then he will have to come before the authority for approval. So I don't know if Steve has any comment on that, but we put a stop to that when we found out about it, and then we'll see where it goes, if it goes anywhere. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Any questions for the airport manager? Member Sotts?
Yeah, I'd just like to make, I'm sorry, did I step on something?
Nope.
Okay. Yeah, I just would like to make the observation that we can add the pigeons from the derelict albatross as being a wildlife hazard.
That was briefed also.
That is a good point. I mean, I hesitated because I was thinking, is there any way that EnviroSystems can provide any sort of a input? But I think we'll hold with the health department there. Any other questions for Manager Rupp? Okay, legal counsel's report, Mr. Takis.
I put in a report in my briefing memo. I don't really have anything to add. Other than I'm very sorry to say that this is Guy Williams' last meeting on the authority. He's been a great leader and a great participant, and I think Carson City and the airport have received a tremendous amount of value from him.
Well, I would certainly echo that. And Guy, on behalf of all of us in the authority, thank you so much for your leadership and your insight and your wit. And your mentorship, I will say, particularly for myself, And it is going to be very sorry to see you go. And I do hope that we'll see you around for at least a bit, and that you aren't going to skip town too fast on us.
Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you, Carl, and the members of the authority. I've appreciated the opportunity to serve on this board and to have been a part of Carson City Airport. It was frankly one of the reasons I came to Carson City a whole bunch of years ago, was the opportunity to build hangars and have a hangar and get stuff associating a large part of my life with aviation. And so to me, this has been a very rewarding thing to do. And with what Morris and Don are going to be doing, I think that's a really pivotal thing to do. We have the master planning process coming up, and I would encourage that we consider some maybe bold strokes in both of these endeavors. I've been sitting around for the last couple of days thinking about a few things. I mean, it was prompted by the business of the Quonset Hut hangars possibly coming up, and I said, you know, the problem we have is that, as Don commented earlier to Mr. Hartman, we have a revenue issue. And maybe there's some things that we can do within the airport boundary, even if it's not commercial industrial, that might bring more aircraft and better buildings here. And one of the things that struck me, just because a friend of mine called me and told me he just bought a place on a fly-in community, one of the provisions for those folks in the fly-in community is they contribute some pretty big bucks to the community for the maintenance, for the privilege of being able to live there. We don't know if this is even possible within Carson City, but we have a lot of hangars here that have aircraft that are transient, that show up, they rent for a little while and go away. There are no aircraft on the rolls because they don't live here. They live somewhere else. Is there a way to make aircraft live here? High-dollar aircraft, not, you know, a 40-year-old 172 that's got, you know, $100 worth of tax revenue on it a year, but maybe people with $850,000 Cirruses and $3.8 million Epics, or TBMs or Pilatuses and things like that. Nevada offers people a great opportunity with residency. Is there a way that the Carson City Airport could dedicate some portion of the airport as fly-in residency? Maybe some of the hangars on the far end of the triangle where we just put more infrastructure in so some development could occur there. Those, one of the provisions of residency in that might be possibly you have to have an aircraft of X value and the building has to be of X value, because the bigger the buildings that people build or the better designed, and that's one of my problems with the Quonset huts. They're inexpensive, low-tax buildings. I think on our airport, we want to make sure that we're building high-quality, high-dollar, high-tax revenue buildings, and we're bringing in high-tax revenue aircraft as well, and maybe considering doing that as part of some of the development, either in the periphery of the airport, the properties abutting the airport, or maybe some section of that downstream center triangle. Maybe there's an opportunity there. But that's just one thought that occurred to me in the last couple of weeks, and I think it's something that you might want to consider. There's other things like that that could be broad strokes things, and I would encourage the authority to dare to be crazy for the next couple of years and see if you can come up with some really big ideas that could really change some things. Anyway, I've really enjoyed my time here. I've enjoyed working with all of you, and no, I'm not going away. I will be back. When the Quonset huts come up, I'll be here as an airport tenant to disagree with that process. But I'll still be around, and I hope to have the opportunity to continue to work with the authority and the airport in whatever capacities are available, because I love aviation and I love airports, and this airport particularly, it's the one I've been associated with for the longest part of my aviation career. I'll be happy to participate.
Thank
putting your name on the list right now.
Well, Member Williams, thanks again. And, you know, I think that we would do well to pick up that bold charge and, you know, and continue to be very creative and think out of the box, you know, for what we can do for our airport and for our community. And we will do that. We will do that. Our treasurer's report, Mr. White.
As of the end of August, the checking account has $20,610.12. Total checking and savings in the bank, $614,890.77. The personal property tax payment from the city has come in, $202,000. And we wrote a total of $90,936 in checks. Next month, in October, I should be able to bring you a quarterly report. We'll take a look at where we're at in the budget, up or down, whatever our expenditures or revenues are, if they're appropriate, meeting our expectations.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Member White, and we'll indeed look forward to next month, seeing how things are shaping up. Any reports from our authority members? I will mention one, and I may have, should have mentioned this during Mr. Rowe's report. As you've heard me say before, I keep track of the or I get these little emails from the FAA about different things going on in the flight procedures office. So I will pass on the heads up that today there was a update that kind of caught my attention with regarding the RNAV GPS 2.7 original approach B. So this new B approach has moved from status pending to terminated. And I don't know what that means. And there has additionally been, there was a mystery one, which was, well, no, it's not a mystery. RNAV GPS A, Amendment 1A, has been moved from pending to terminated. To me, this would suggest both the C and D category minimums approach, the new one, approach B, as well as the night restriction being lifted, the amendment 1A to the current approach. Although no, because it's the RNAV GPS alpha, so that would be the one coming in from the south. In any case, there was an amendment being presented to that. In any case, both of these have moved from pending to terminated. I think that we need to follow up and find out what that is. That doesn't sound good. Now,
last week, I think it was a week ago, Monday, the FAA flight check, LIR 60, was shooting its approaches around the airport, and Beth Houghton, the flight procedures person in Seattle, has been out of the office. I tried even calling her today so I could have an update, but she won't be back in until Monday. But I will call her on Monday while on vacation, but I will give you a call or email you with what I find out.
Well, I appreciate that. And maybe as just a silver lining or a glimmer of hope, I will also note that both of these did also say, though, that the date, the notification for estimated charting has been updated to 12/10/2015. So, you know, we'll find out what piece of that is the accurate piece. And maybe we find that terminated is just means the activity is terminated, and that's a good thing. But I wanted to bring that to your attention. Yes, sir.
Regarding past discussions about how the agenda is sent out, I've asked in the past that we try to consolidate this to minimize the amount of traffic. I realize this month I was a part of that traffic. However, for this month's meeting, I received 16 emails. Is there a way we can slow this traffic down? Everybody funnel it, your thoughts and comments to Tim and let him get them out in one or two, three emails.
So you mean email traffic in advance of the meeting, housekeeping?
Right.
Well, there's a good chance to review the process. So really, this is around proposed agenda items. And do we understand correctly that the proper process for putting an item on the agenda as a member of the authority is to email the nature of that to Tim, for Tim typically then to share those proposals with question mark, do you bounce them off of TACUS in some cases if they look like they have a legal nature? How does that process work?
Generally, if it's a matter that needs to be added to the agenda, I've gotten pretty good at formulating the agenda into a readable form. If there is a legal question, I do forward that question to Steve TACUS, who will send it back and with his comments and usually in a rewritten way that is usually it's something that helps me out because there are some things that I just don't know how to word because of the legal implications.
But that traffic then would be internal. So I'm kind of trying to, you know, and I don't disagree, Member White. I mean, I know that there's a lot of email, but I'm trying to think to myself on the spot what the nature of it really is. So just can you give an example of what you kind of see as, without getting too deep into it, as excessive? I mean, is there a dialogue that goes back and forth on what? Because we know it can't really be a discussion between the full membership.
Right. So one of the things, and on its own, it's not particularly an issue, but it's the combined volume. Steve will send out a draft. We'll immediately get a response and appreciate the response from Mr. Clegg that everything looks good to him. And then generally somebody else will say, well, yeah, the agenda looks good to me. And then so there's four emails right there. So rather than perhaps responding to the entire group, the agenda looks fine, respond strictly to Tim. Let Tim handle the traffic.
All I can say is I've got a bucket on my computer. Everything funnels there. I read very quickly. I personally prefer the unfiltered data. I can read it quickly. I scan it. Sometimes I spot something we comment on and something I don't. But just personally, I would rather have the bucket of raw data to comment on rather than miss something that somebody else filtered before it got to me. I may like the original conversation more than what's happened after it's been whittled down. So I can appreciate the volume, but all I can say is I'm not finding it a burdensome amount of time. The way I structure my intake and scanning, it's not that much work.
And again, it may be strictly on my side dealing with probably north of 40 emails on any given day.
40. How do I get 40? How do I get it down to 40?
I want that email inbox.
I would suggest that there is a penchant for people to hit reply all a whole lot more times than they ought to. So the comment Morris made that reply to the sender, not to everybody. As having been chairman and got – the chairman gets a lot more because it goes there before it goes elsewhere. And, you got to be careful with the reply alls. I'm not here anymore. I don't have to deal with it. But I would say –
I'll echo that as a good starting point just to be conscientious of if it's sort of a, it looks good to me. Let's just, channel that back to Tim, and maybe that'll cut down a bit on it.
I think the way you originally send it out, don't send it out so someone can reply to all. BCC everyone, and you can only reply to the sender when you reply.
Yeah, I could easily do that. When I do the agenda, this is the process that it was handed down to me, and I don't know who came up with it, is with the authority members only for the final agenda. Actually, I do that with a draft also, is that I send to all the members on the authority.
But for all other recipients with the final agenda, I do blind copy. If it's preferred, and I think I would prefer to defer to Steve on this, I could blind copy the agenda. That's not a problem.
I really don't think it matters. I mean, I think that Guy Williams' suggestion is to be cautious about the reply all is really the key here. In terms of the agenda, I think it is helpful for Tim to send out the draft agenda to all you guys because frequently you'll talk about an item that you want to see on the agenda, and, you know, 3 weeks from now, we forget about that. We're too busy putting out other fires, and so we need reminding. And in the reminding department, Member Peterson, early on you were asking questions about the cricket situation, and I think you got cut off. I mean, I think this is an appropriate time or during the manager's report or whenever to ask whatever questions you had.
We had a proposal sort of to accept, consider and accept how to, whether they're going to terminate the lease and what to do about it. And the board, I believe, requested the manager to reach out to them and tell them we want the proposal, but we need some specifics. Do we have that?
We have not. The morning after the meeting, I sent an email to Mr. Cockrell expressing the questions and requesting an answer to those questions in writing. And I also followed that up with a phone call. It was a message, and I've had no response.
So at this point, there has not been an official notice of termination from them, right?
There has not.
And if that's the case, we are not actually on notice to take action.
That is
and
correct.
Worst case, if they terminate, there are terms in place that require them to remediate the entire thing and leave it clean. We have no particular downside. We might be looking for an upside by getting in the middle of a deal. My impression back then, I'll just say, was it was kind of a small deal, and aren't there other things we could be doing with our time? But at this point, there's no downside for us to wait until they give us a notice of termination, in which case, really, it's in their position to say, plan A is follow the contract. Would you consider a plan B, and we get our specific proposal at that time? Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
Okay.
So we have potentially that matter. We have Kupal, it sounds like, coming back. And per the comments that were made tonight, I don't know. You know, I think we'll find out in the coming couple of weeks what the full scope of what may be discussed next month might be. But you kind of know where I'm heading. I mean, I think we may find ourselves in a position to assess whether they have the intent to go forward based on what they've been able to work out with their neighbor. And that would put us in a place to, I think, be evaluating the proposed structures.
Right. I think it's going to be broader than just do they get a refund of the appraisal fee if somebody else gets the bid. I think we need to capture the full amount of issues so that you can discuss the other issues that have been brought up, namely, is this an appropriate place to put budget hangers?
That's exactly where I'm going. I think that you hopefully could see that in my questions to Mr. Kupal, that let's do this. So when we craft the agenda item, I want to make sure that we get that right so that we don't waste anybody's time. You know, if you know, sort of like with the residential development off the end of the runway. You know, I think that was actually something that we were able to be very helpful to the process by stating sort of some of the concerns and some of the things that need to be looked at. And I think it was in the right spirit of people kind of weighing things before they got too, you know, deeper than they needed to be. So I hope we'll do the same here.
Is it appropriate for me to proceed with the appraisal?
To proceed with the appraisal? Well,
no, you can't, because he's said he doesn't want to be stuck with it if he doesn't get the bid. So the condition that the authority voted on was that you could proceed if he agreed to pay for it, and he's essentially told us he's only conditionally agreeing. He hasn't agreed to that, basically. So, I don't think you can. I think the other thing that would have to be determined now, because the parcel's been broken into the two pieces, what area would be appraised? because he's really proposing just a sliver of it. He's not proposing to take the entire piece. And I think those are issues that we should bring on the next agenda as part of that global issue.
Agreed.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, because there's another subdivision of the parcel that would be necessary, you know, down the road. So, okay, any other reports from authority members? Okay, you guys good for tonight. There's no public left to comment. We wore them out. So the pitchforks have been curbed and the torches extinguished. Yeah, we've discussed agenda items for the next regular meeting, and that takes us to everyone's favorite. So who'd like to do it? Motion on adjournment.
I move. I
I move we adjourn.
Mr. Williams moves to adjourn. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That was Member White.
Everybody.